is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everyone, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Thank you for tuning in. It's interesting. Yesterday in the 4 o'clock hour, I got an interesting call from a gentleman that brought up the idea of a national divorce. And if you look at where this country is right now, it's easy to understand why some people might like this idea. If you look at where this country is right now, we have never been more divided, at least not maybe since the Civil War. If you look at what's happening in red states versus what's happening in blue states, the laws that they're passing on issues ranging from abortion to vaccine mandates to criminal justice to taxes to just about anything in the world, it can look as if we are two different countries, not just politically, but culturally, ethnically. So does it make sense for America to have an amicable national divorce? Other people have suggested it. 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. I don't think so. And as frustrating as the political leadership in California might be for people in Florida or Alabama, as frustrating as the political leadership in Mississippi or Wyoming might be for people in New York or New Jersey, I really agree with the column that Carol Markowitz wrote in the New York Post this week that the idea of a national divorce, splitting the country essentially into two countries without a civil war, because a lot of people have suggested this, not just people on the right, but people on the left as well. Conservative Jesse Kelly 3 years ago argued that, quote, our political disagreements have become a powder keg and we should redraw the map. Sarah Silverman, left-leaning comedian, recently touted the idea. We are absolutely at each other's throats over every issue. And it's only gotten worse over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. I don't think this is something that could work. If you look at New York alone, New York is, you know, certainly a city and a state that's overwhelmingly blue, but it's not all blue. So what are you going to do? You're going to say to the 65% of people in Staten Island, for instance, oh, sorry, you're now part of blue America instead of red America, and you have to abide by their laws. In solidly blue New York State, Trump won 3.2 million votes to Biden's 5.2 million. Now, Trump's 3.2 million is more than five times the number of people living in Wyoming, which is the reddest state in the country. So do conservatives in New York State simply surrender the whole Empire State in this national divorce? How would those 3.2 million voters that voted for Trump feel about that? So New York is a sea of all sorts of red counties, not just Staten Island, but even in New York City itself. You have Brighton Beach, Borough Park, Howard Beach, Breezy Point, Bay Ridge, Bensonhurst, Throgs Neck in the Bronx. So it's not just New York, though. If you look at a lot of the other blue states, there's pockets of red. If you look at a lot of the other red states, Texas, for instance, there's pockets of blue. So I realize that it can be frustrating for you to be in the same country as people who you vehemently disagree with. That being said, I really do think that it's worth sticking it out here. I really do think that it's worth trying to make this work, this noble experiment, this melting pot, not just of ethnicity, not just of racial and ethnic diversity, but of political diversity. And I think rather than people on the left and on the right trying to cleave the country into two or three separate new countries, let's instead channel those energies into getting along with our neighbors and trying to find a way to make this country work. 800-848-9222. You're welcome to agree. You're welcome to disagree. It's 1-800-848-WABC. As Carol Markowitz said in her terrific New York Post column, we're still a very new country. We continue to grow and evolve. The solution isn't to divide it up so we could be briefly better represented. It's to persuade others to our way of thinking and voting, whatever that way of thinking is, and to remember the ideas that forged our national marriage in the first place. Because unfortunately, I have a feeling it's going to get worse. Because if you look at the state, now that we're going into a redistricting year following the census, if you look at the states that have a legislature and a governor's office controlled by one party, they are likely to redraw their legislative lines and redraw their congressional districts to be in a manner much more favorable to the party that's in power. That goes for red states like Texas. That goes for blue states like New York. So New York, probably due to gerrymandering, is about to get a whole lot bluer. Texas is about to get a whole lot redder. I don't think that the solution is to simply split up. Tell me what you think and why. Why or why not? 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I have been alarmed not only at the number of people that I've heard bring this up on the radio, but the number of opinion leaders. I mentioned Jesse Kelly and Sarah Silverman that I've heard mention this as well. I think that would be counterproductive. And I really do think that we should find a way to live together and make this country work together. 800-848-9222. Got an action-packed show for you. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to talk with Paula Poundstone, a legendary stand-up comic. You can also hear her on the NPR show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She's got a new comedy album out and an upcoming show in New York in about 8 days. She's going to be here. Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor, and my colleague here at WABC, he's going to be here at 2:30, and we'll do our AC report at 3:30 with Michael Traeger from Travel Zork. So we're just getting started here. But first, I'd love to hear from you. 800-848-9222. Tony is in Queens. Tony, is it time for a national divorce?
No, I think what you say is very great. That New York and even America is the melting pot of the world. It is the greatest country. And we're just learning that we are greater than our differences. It's a process, but we're getting it together. And it takes very intense events for us to break through our differences and get together. So what you're saying is great. We shouldn't focus on what's going wrong. We should see that we can live together, and we will. In the long run, we will.
Well, now, Tony, I certainly agree with you, right? So we're on the same page. But let me play devil's advocate here. Let's say you're a conservative. You always vote Republican. You're electing Republicans to represent you in the state legislature and electing Republicans to elect you in Congress. Yet, because of the way the electoral vote shakes out and the fact that the blue states have a lot of electoral votes, you end up with a Democratic president and two Democratic houses of Congress, and they're passing all sorts of legislation which you just don't like. It's going to mean you pay higher taxes. It's going to mean you are letting illegal aliens into your community that you may not want to deal with. It's going to mean you have soft on crime policies that you're not happy with. Why should you, somebody that, and again, I agree with you, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Why should you, somebody that always votes the right way, have to deal with the repercussions of the way people in California and New York and New Jersey are voting?
To me, that's the game. We got to learn to stretch, go beyond our beliefs, and flow with things more. Doesn't mean you're giving in to anything that doesn't really feel right, like defunding the police or something. You know, that's absurd in the bigger picture. So you learn to flow, but you see how you have to correct things. And that's how we start breaking through our tight, rigid ways of seeing things. We stretch each other so we can come together.
I love it, Tony. Love it. I want to urge you to read this column by Carol Markowitz. I think she puts it far better than I ever should, than I ever could. I just linked to it on my Facebook page. You could check it out at facebook.com/MoranoFan. I'm going to link to it on my Twitter as well, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. 800-848-WABC. April is in Astoria. Hello, April.
Hi, good morning. I agree with the first caller. What I was going to say is I don't think we should just give up and just like everyone go to the side, you know, turn the country into pieces. What is that part in the government where they said if they can keep her, meaning people have to learn how the government works, be involved. And I feel that when people don't like what they see, the government has to have a strong hand on how we react to when we don't like what the others say, not to allow one side to get away with being violent and the other side goes to jail. They have to be fair on both sides, and violence will occur. And in school, they have to teach government in school, how the government works. Because I think most people are very ignorant and they don't understand how government works. And you can't always get your way, even though there's things I hate. I don't walk down the street and start smashing windows. So people who get violent should be held accountable.
Well, no, I agree, April, and I think what you're talking about, the line that you were searching for, was what Benjamin Franklin said during the Constitutional Convention when they just whipped up this noble experiment in the Constitution, and somebody asked him, "What have you given us, Dr. Franklin?" And he said, "A republic, if you can keep it." But and I think it's a very apropos thing that you refer to that. But April, you mentioned how you don't think it's appropriate if for people that disagree with the laws or the way a policeman acts or anything for that matter, to go out into the street and start rioting and start smashing things up. And look, I agree with you as well. I don't think it's time for a national split. But there are going to be those that say, look, there are a whole bunch of leaders in this country that have no problem essentially letting those people off with a slap on the wrist, maybe not even arresting them at all. Why should voters in half the country, why should citizens in half the country be governed by folks that feel that way? What do you say to those folks?
We don't have anywhere else to go. I mean, I love my country and I want it to work. It's like a child that's having problems in school learning. You don't just give up and push the child aside and say, you know, I give up on
right.
it.
Well,
we have to, as adults,
yeah.
learn.
No, I hear that, April. But there are those that are saying, and again, the conservatives dislike liberal governance as much as liberals dislike conservative governance. And there are those that are saying, all right. You know, it's like an amicable divorce. You want to do things your way? God bless you. New York, New Jersey, California, Oregon, you name it. You guys are now doing your thing. And Alabama and the rest, the states of the old Confederacy, essentially, We're going to do our thing. Now, the purple states, the North Carolinas, the Georgias, the Colorados, the Ohios, the Pennsylvanias, I don't know what you do with them. I guess maybe they'll have their choice of which country they want to join. Is it time for an amicable divorce? My answer is no. What do you think? 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Mike is in New Jersey. Hello, Mike.
Hey, good morning. I am currently in favor of a national split. I don't think we can exist like this.
How come?
I think that the left, and I have always considered myself to be somewhat to the left, but this has gone a little bit overboard. This is a weaponization of all levers of government against anyone who disagrees. When you have the weaponization of law enforcement and coming down on people disproportionately, I think that's a recipe for disaster. I don't think we can exist like this.
Well, I appreciate it, Mike. Thank you. 800-848-9222. Bob in New Jersey, what say you?
Hi, how are you? Great subject.
Thank you.
First, I'd like to say that I think everybody in the country has a valid gripe for being angry. I think that everybody in the country have valid gripes for being angry. Some people are mad about the taxes. Some people are mad about the vaccine.
Right. Some people are mad about climate change.
About everything.
Yeah.
Some people are mad because they don't trust our leaders anymore. Some people don't like the fake commercials and blah, blah, blah. Everybody has a valid gripe for being angry these days. And I also want to say that I'm very patriotic. I love my country very much. Everybody's angry and overtaxed and being forced to do that and my opinion is it creates people to be splintered because they're frustrated. So they out of frustration because they're so angry the last 30, 40 years, it pushes us apart because we're desperate. People are desperate to find an answer because they're so tired of the lying from the politicians and they're so tired from being overtaxed. God knows I'm overtaxed in Jersey. I pay $15,000 a month just in taxes. And that doesn't include the tax to go over the bridge, $16. I've got a gripe like everybody else, but I still love my country.
Well, Bob, thank you. I guess the question for a lot of folks is, what is your country, right? If the country is adopting policies that are anathema to where you are, and yet your community, your state, and a number of other states are still adopting policies that are in line with your philosophy and your way of thinking, then I think their thinking is maybe it's time to go our separate ways. Amicable split. Left-wing America goes here, right-wing America goes here, purple America can decide where they want to go. Not my preference. I think we should stick it out. I think actually a big part of the reason people are feeling so divided these days is the media. If you're a conservative these days, you can start your day listening to conservative talk radio on the way to work. Then you get to work, you read a conservative newspaper. You get home from work, you watch a conservative cable news channel. You listen to a conservative podcast before you go to bed, and you surround yourself with a circle of friends that echoes your political philosophy, and never are you exposed to somebody that thinks differently than you. Same thing on the liberal end of things. You can surround your whole day with a media bubble and a social group that just echoes the way that you think. Years ago, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and I'm not saying it was better back then, but everybody watched Ed Sullivan on television. And they would go to work the next day talking about what happened on Ed Sullivan. Now, there is nothing that everybody watches. There is no common denominator. We're all living in our own bubbles, and the media feeds on that. You know why? Because of money. Because of money. The right wing and the left wing anger machines, they keep throwing fuel and telling you, look at those guys over there. Look at the guys in the blue shirts. Those guys are the bad guys. And it becomes essentially professional wrestling. And the more they do it, the bigger their ratings are, the more books they sell, the more clicks they get. And what's the byproduct of it? We're in a country where people don't feel as if people that they disagree with politically are their neighbors. Do you hear the names that conservatives who call this radio show call liberals? Do you hear the names that liberals who don't like Donald Trump or Rudy Giuliani, Rudy Giuliani, by the way, coming up at 2:30, do you hear the names they call Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani? We are past the point of noble opposition, loyal opposition. We're past the point of disagreement. We're now at a point of wanting to destroy the other side. So if the solution is not a national split, what is the solution? I don't have the answer. Curious if you do. 800-848-9222. Fred is in Brooklyn. Hello, Fred.
Good morning, Frank. I wholeheartedly agree with you that the media is fracturing us. It's going to be very difficult to rein the media in. But let me say this as it relates to politicians, because they can be reined in. I am issue-oriented. I am not party-affiliated. I never have, nor will I ever become a member of a political party. But we have career politicians who are more interested in feathering their own nests than they are doing right by you, me, and our fellow Americans. We need to have term limits. We need for people, when they arrive in Washington, D.C., or the state capitol, or the municipal legislature, and they're full of vim and vigor about doing right, we need people before they become toxically poisoned to kick them out. So we also need, once we get these career politicians out, we need to stop this policy that you could go into the well in Congress, say anything you want, lie, knowingly lie, and do so without recrimination, because that divides people. So here's what I propose. Before we get term limits, anyone who is serving beyond two terms is tarred and feathered in the public square. Julius Caesar said, give them bread in the circus.
All right, Fred. That's not going to be helpful. You want to take somebody who let's take the two most polarizing politicians in America, right? Who would you say they are? I would say it's Donald Trump on the right, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on the left. The people that don't like Trump think Trump is a liar. They think he's a demagogue. They think he's a racist. And they think he's an idiot. The people that don't like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez think she's an idiot. They think she's a liar. They think she's a communist. They think she is bringing about the destruction of America. So who gets to decide who's tarred and feathered? I mean, it's a ridiculous proposal, and we have something called the Constitution, which prohibits that from happening. 800-848-9222. Carol is in Wayne, New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Good morning, Frank. I'd like to remind us all of about a week ago when you were discussing Frank Burns, Ken Burns' theory on the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, and the Great Depression / World War II, when the country was falling apart and the only way it got together was through military action. And people called in about the optimistic or pessimistic view they had. And by far, by my count over here anyway, I think that most people were pessimistic. And I think that this country's in big, big trouble. I, too, like the gentleman just ahead of me, I'm not affiliated with either party. But I have to say one thing. When Nancy Pelosi stood up at Congress and tore Donald Trump's State of the Union speech in half, I got chills all over, because to me, that was the end of any consolation we could ever have as a country. I really feel there's no turning back. We're headed into big, big trouble.
So what do you think the solution is, Carol?
I don't think there is one, Frank. I'm so sorry to say this. I think a civil war is brewing.
Well, and thank you for the call, Carol. That's why the people who are supportive of a national split think we should just split. Let's avoid a civil war, bloodiest war in American history, and let's say, let's go our separate ways. It's like a divorce. I've known a lot of couples that have gone through very acrimonious divorces, and then I've known a lot of couples that have been through amicable divorces. A lot easier when you don't have children. And the couples that I've known that go through the amicable divorce, they say, all right, okay, let's just divide everything evenly, be amicable, and we'll go our separate ways and move on with our lives. But is that something that's practical now? Is it something that's even desirable? I don't think so. And I think Carol Markowitz does a good job explaining why. I've linked to her column. I hope you read it. And if there's time later, I'll continue to take your calls on this subject. Paula Poundstone joins me next, one of America's best stand-up comics and a veteran author, actress, podcaster, you name it. She's done it all. She joins me in just a minute. 800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
You're hearing things.
You're hearing things.
On 77 WABC.
Bobby Sherman singing Little Woman. Rumor has it that Bobby Sherman is a favorite of our next guest. I'll tell you, speaking of our next guest, most of the interviews that I do on this program, we have on guest after guest, doesn't matter the subject, and our staff just kind of rolls their eyes and says, oh, okay, another guest discussing alien implantation, another guest discussing craps dice control, another guest discussing whatever Frank's interest of the day is. But this is the first interview in a long time where our whole staff is like, I can't believe you're having somebody like Paula Poundstone on. She is somebody that is a fan favorite not only in our studio, but is generally regarded as one of the greatest stand-up comics of in America. And a lot of lists have her as one of the greatest stand-up comics of all time. She's not only a stand-up comic, though. She's been an author, a podcaster, an actress, a commentator. She's done it all, and I am thrilled that she's agreed to stay up late with us this morning. Paula, thanks so much for joining me on the radio. I'm a big fan as well.
Well, I'm very flattered. I'm happy to be here, Frank, and I'm really excited to get into the topic of craps dice control.
Excellent. So are you a pass better or are you a don't pass better?
Actually, I don't even know how to do it. I see people doing it. Like, I watch, in the Martin Landau Columbo episode, one of the twin brothers played craps.
You know, it's funny. I'm a big fan of Martin Landau and a big Columbo fan. I don't think I've seen that. I have to check that one out.
Ooh, it's a good one. He plays Martin Landau plays himself. He's identical twins.
Now that's an episode and a half from where I'm concerned. I'm going to check that one out.
Good stuff.
So, Paul, I want to talk to you about your upcoming show in New York. I know a lot of our listeners are going to be eager to try and come see you. You've got a new comedy album out, but I am curious. You've been at this a long time. You broke into comedy back in the early '80s, and I think I read an article about Norm MacDonald recently, and it was an interview that he gave before he passed away, and he was talking about some wisdom that he'd gotten from a stand-up comedian when he first started. And they said back in the 70s, there were 50 stand-up comics. Only five of them were good. Today, there's 5,000 stand-up comics, but only five of them are good. I'm curious, how do you think stand-up comedy has changed from when you first broke in to the current day?
I don't think it's changed much, really. I would disagree with the number five. I think that the number 5,000 is probably correct. I think there's certainly more than five good comics, but I don't really watch people anymore. I don't watch comics because I work alone. I extricated myself from comedy clubs years ago, and so I work in theaters, and it's just me. And therefore, I really don't know much about the, you know, the people coming up. It used to be many years ago where I would work, you know, there was an MC and a middle act and a headliner, and you cross paths a lot. And so I knew a lot more guys than I do now.
So can you watch a stand-up comedy special just for fun, or do you?
No.
You can't?
No, I can't, because it's kind of a busman's holiday. If I'm watching someone else, and which I really don't do, but on the rare occasion when I have seen a few minutes of somebody else, if they say something that I think is really funny, I laugh for about 2 seconds before I go, well, why didn't I think of that? Mm. So I really prefer to avoid it. I love old stuff. I mean, I don't watch stand-up comedy at all, come to think of it. I love, for example, the old – okay, I'll take that back. First Richard Pryor stand-up comedy movie, which was just Richard Pryor Live. That was brilliant, and I have it on videotape, and I think of it often. Richard Pryor doesn't say one thing that I say to myself, why didn't I think of that?
I bet that's the case. There are, when you first broke in, there were a few prominent stand-up comics who were female, people like Phyllis Diller, Joan Rivers, but nothing like what we see these days. Do you think it's easier to be a female comedian these days, in part maybe because of the groundwork that you've helped to lay?
Oh, I don't know if I'm on the backs of the others that came before me. I think that there are tons of really funny women, and the good news is that, you know, less and less does it matter. I mean, it's funny you said the thing about the numbers, the 550 comics and there's five good ones and 5,000 comics and there's five good ones. I would say, you know, people ask me all the time, like, you know, oh, there's so many more women comics than there used to be. That's because there's more comics overall than there used to be. I think percentage-wise, I'll bet you we're in the exact same place. But I don't much think it matters. You know, and when I was started out, I really never thought of myself as a woman comedian. I mean, it's just such a silly idea. You're just telling jokes, you know. It doesn't require like any. If we had to tell jokes while leaning forward, bending at a right angle, and lifting a chair. Then there would be a difference.
Right.
And the difference would be that women could do it and men couldn't. but outside of that, it really is so, like, who gives, you know?
Yeah, if you throw killing a spider and opening a jar of pickles in there simultaneously, then maybe the men would have an advantage. But your point's well taken. Now,
my oldest daughter was the best jar opener. I've never known a man who could. There's nobody has a jar opening grip like my oldest daughter.
Wow.
And and she's woman through and through.
Did she have a secret technique of some sort? It was just natural, God given ability.
Yeah, I think it just was a natural ability. We're atheists, so I'm not sure that it came from a God. But also, I did send her to that jar opening camp.
I see. See, that'll do it.
That helped.
Particularly,
you know, I think she had the talent, but that developed it. Yeah.
See, particularly if it's a sleepaway camp, that'll do it. you know, one of the things that was very big in comedy years ago was the concept of comedy albums. They seem to have waned in popularity in recent years, but it seems like they're making a bit of a comeback. You've got a comedy album out now, and people can check it out at paulapoundstone.com. Tell me about your comedy album.
They're not albums anymore, like that you would go to Tower Records and buy a disc. Or
right. Well, good luck going to Tower Records.
Some of them are. Oh, God, I loved Tower Records.
Same.
A terrible loss. I personally really enjoy the picture on the cover. I just always. So the idea that you can just sort of download something, I don't know. That's nice, I guess. But I do just, you mentioned Bobby Sherman, and I forget what caused me to think about Bobby Sherman recently, but whatever it was I thought, I tweeted about it. And I'm telling you, the outpouring of people talking about how much they loved Bobby Sherman was, it honestly was like one. I like to think that I'm pretty good on Twitter, but I think I got more response to that than almost anything I've ever written. But I do remember, and maybe I said this, I can't remember. I do remember that when I would listen to his album, I would sit and stare at the record cover. And he had one where there was like the cover was a picture of him in a frame, and the frame lined the edges of the album cover. And he was, he had a pink ruffly shirt and a black velvet choker collar. And, it was probably the stillest I've ever sat in my life, just for hours and hours. It was like I was in an ashram or something, just thinking about Bobby Sherman.
I'd always wondered who'd inspired your wardrobe. Now I have an idea.
I don't wear choker collars, and I've never worn a pink ruffly shirt, although I would. His was really nice.
I think you're one of the few people that's been on this program that can pull it off. We're talking to Paula Poundstone, legendary stand-up comic, author, and commentator on all things that are worthy of her attention. You can check out her website at paulapoundstone.com. Buy several of the digital equivalent of the comedy albums, and you can actually see her coming up at the Town Hall in New York on October 7th. Now, I've heard you never do the same show twice, that every show you do is a bit different. Is that so that you don't get bored doing the show 900 times, or is that because you want people to keep seeing show after show?
No, it's because I have no memory. Memorizing things is very, very difficult for me. And when I started, and I only had to memorize 5 minutes 42 years ago, but when I would go on stage, I would instantly forget what I meant to say. And so I very early on was forced to, to talk to people in the crowd. The time I do the time honor, where are you from? What do you do for a living? And in this way, I still do it. It's my favorite part of the night. And in this way, little biographies of audience members emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails. And so they may say something that reminds me of something that's, blowing around in the back of my brain. And also we have, conversations that are unique just to that night, stuff that I've not said before, but it's I feel like it's the heart of what I do after all these years, just kind of knowing, I don't know, I'm not everybody in the crowd, obviously, but people in the crowd. And it, in that way, I don't have the same individuals night after night. And even if I did, I don't necessarily, start talking to the same people. And so, I get led in a different direction on different nights, and every show's different. I do a music club in Alexandria, Virginia, where I'll go for three nights in November. And I've had people there come up and tell me that they've come to all three shows. And right away, I'm like, really? Were they different? And they're like, oh, yeah. Oh, good. Phew.
Talk with Paula Poundstone. If you're in the New York area, you can see her coming up next Thursday, October 7th, an evening with Paula Poundstone at the Town Hall Legendary Theater here in Midtown. You can get tickets at thetownhall.org. That's thetownhall.org. Be warned, though, that if you go to the show, that you better have an interesting biography prepared, because you may be prepared to you may be called upon to answer some questions about it. You mentioned starting in comedy about 40.
You know, when you say stuff like Midtown, I'm probably one of the only people who goes to New York with any kind of regularity for whom that means nothing. I have no sense of direction, and I'm always constantly lost when I'm in New York. And I have never, like, if I go for a walk, you know, say I'm in early enough that I could, you know, walk down the street and look at things, I only stay on the same street the whole time. Because if I turn, I might not make it back to the hotel.
Well, that plus the confession about your memory has all of the yellow cab drivers that are listening to us right now applauding and cheering because they've been struggling financially and they see a gold mine coming when you're in town next week. You talk about starting in comedy 42 years ago. I know that you got an early boost in your comedic career from Robin Williams. I'm wondering if you could tell people what it was like getting to know him off screen or off stage, what he was like and what his advocacy for you meant for your career.
He was a very kind, generous, fun guy. He was also very quiet a lot. You know, so one sometimes wondered about oneself when you were with him because, you know, because he was so quiet and it was so different from how he was on stage that you're like, all right, he thinks, you know, he started deciding what he was thinking, which is never healthy in any friendship. He was a very generous guy. He did help me get my first managers, which were his managers, and by the way, Dana Carvey had the same management at the time and also recommended me. So I was very lucky that I had, you know, two different people sort of pushing me forward, which was great. And then when Robin hosted Saturday Night Live, he had them bring me on just to do stand up, which was very exciting. It was a long time ago. It was very fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can imagine, and it's interesting to hear he wasn't the same sort of pies in the face and seltzer bottles at inappropriate times person off stage as so many of us that knew him only in public life might picture him being.
I think he thought a lot. And then he sort of exploded on stage, and then he kind of went back to quiet.
Well, whatever works. Clearly, it worked for him. You have been doing this terrific podcast, which is just wildly popular. It's called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And it is funny. It is amusing. But I feel like the podcast allows folks to see a different aspect of your personality and a different skill set. Now, you spend a lot of time interviewing some interesting characters and some subject matter experts. Is that a challenge for you at all when you're so used to being the center of attention, maybe being interviewed yourself and performing for the public, to make the person you're interviewing the center of attention for that moment?
I suppose it is a challenge because I don't think I always do it all that well. You know, the thing about our podcast is I like the idea. I mean, hopefully the podcast is funny, just the funny podcast. That's its job. But I also like the idea that if somebody says to themselves, you know, You know, there's tons and tons of funny podcasts, but you know, but here's some real information that got shared, and usually it's real information that is utilitarian in someone's life. So I like the idea that even if they didn't find me like hysterically funny that day, they still, you know, come away from listening and go, well, you know, I didn't know you were supposed to pour hot water down your drains regularly.
Right.
And the other thing I feel, there's also a lot of serious podcasts one can listen to where they have information and good information. I feel like while this person is, you know, answering questions in a sincere manner, I also like the opportunity to make jokes just so that, you know, figuring that that's at least somewhat unique to, you know, to where someone might find that information otherwise.
Right before you came on, we were talking a little bit about the divisions in the country, especially along political lines. You're at a situation now where it seems like Republicans and Democrats not only can't agree on things, they don't even want to be in the same room as one another. Do you view comedy as something that can still be an equalizer? Can Democrats and Republicans these days still laugh at the same jokes?
Sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. I'm a Democrat. I'm a proud Democrat. I support President Biden. I have terrific senators and a great representative. I'm in Ted Lieu's district. You know, all good stuff. And if you were to bring me the most right wing Republican and I were to sit down and talk with that person, I can guarantee you that we have more in common than we have differences. I know that to be true. It's not even something that I need to, you know, I know that to be true because we're human beings. We have people that we love. We want to be loved. We want to be respected, right? We eat, we breathe oxygen, we don't eat our young, and we probably have a podcast. Because all human beings have podcasts now. So, yeah, there are things that we can both laugh about. I'll tell you that there was a shift. I can't remember if it was before Trump was elected or just after he was elected. I did find a shift in some of my audience members were, you know, very hostile to the idea of a Trump joke. Not a lot, but here and there at one time. And I've also had the experience, again, this is while Trump was in office, I've also had the experience of, because I used to do a meet and greet after the show. And what's kind of cool about a meet and greet is people will tell me things because we're probably never going to meet again. And so there's, you know, there's sort of a strangers on a train feeling.
Right.
About
so
it.
Do people,
you
confess know? Crimes or affairs and or scandalous
well, they
behavior?
They haven't really confessed crimes, but they do tell me stuff like, you know, a lot of times people will say, oh, you know, can I give you a hug? And prior to COVID, I always said, absolutely. And the person will whisper in my ear, you know, my son, it died a year ago, and this is the first night I've been out of the house. Like, I mean, people tell you stuff. And I have had, I won't say that it's double digits, but I have had single digits of people coming up to me whispering, I'm a Republican, but I really enjoyed your show.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And so,
yeah, it is actually. And the truth is, I mean, I talk about politics here and there when I feel like it. I don't view myself as a political comic, but I do view myself as an adult functioning in the world and a responsible citizen. And so voting is some of that. And you know,
So sometimes I do say what I think.
Paula, and again, I could talk with you all day, and I hope you'll come back in the future, and I hope everybody...
I hope I get to.
Oh, no, absolutely. And if folks want to see Paula Poundstone, they can do it next Thursday, October 7th, at the Town Hall. Go to thetownhall.org. I am curious what you do for fun. You mentioned being an atheist and guessing you're not going to church for fun. I could tell with your lack of knowledge of craps being just that Martin Landau episode of Columbo that you're not hanging out in casinos. I don't know that I could picture you hanging out, you know, at strip bars or things like that. What do you do for fun? What's your guilty pleasure, if anything?
I don't know if I have a guilty pleasure.
Well, what's your innocuous pleasure?
One of my favorite things in the entire world I haven't been able to do because of COVID, but you know, in the before time, I used to have, you know, 3, 4, 5 a year ping pong parties in my backyard.
Ping pong.
And we would,
wow.
Yeah, and we would choose up doubles partners from a hat, and man, that was fun. Really, really fun. Every now and then I'll bump into somebody, maybe meet somebody, and I'll say, "Are you, do you play ping pong?" And they'll say, "Oh, I'm not very good." I go, "Perfect."
Now, do you play that you have to win by 2? Game to 21, you have to win by 2?
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's – well, we'll have to play. We'll have to play. Maybe we could do a ping pong match for charity, because I'm always looking for players that are not that good as well. So I want an invite to one of those Paula Poundstone ping pong tournaments. So
that sounds good. I challenged Martina Navratilova just via Twitter. She said that she would – play me. You know, she hasn't put up yet, but she did. I follow her on Twitter, and one time she and her wife had gone out. I don't know if it was an anniversary dinner or birthday dinner or something, and she put up a picture of her and her wife and said, "Oh, you know, we went out, you know, for this celebration." And I retweeted it with a comment just saying, you know, "Good, keep eating." that's good. So you don't have time to practice. Just keep eating. And she wrote me back and said, "I don't need to practice." Great.
She's too good for the tournament. Too good for the tournament that I'm going to be invited. Paula, good luck with the show next Thursday. I hope a lot of our listeners come. I hope people check out the podcast and a lot of the other fascinating things that they can at paulapoundstone.com. You could hear her regularly on NPR. I hope we can do this again soon.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much. It was fun.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure was all mine. And finally, I'm worthy of the recognition and the fondness of some of our staff here in the studio as well. Paula Poundstone, you want to comment on any portion of our discussion? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead. Hey, coming up next hour, America's Mayor Rudy Giuliani will be here. We'll take your calls at 800-848-WABC. And, you know, I still have this tickle in my throat. It's been with me now a couple of weeks. I'm thinking I might have some sort of a post-nasal drip. I mean, I feel great, but I just still have this annoying tickle in the back of my throat. I've been trying everything. So if you have a suggestion for it, give me a call, 800-848-WABC. Until next hour, help control the pet population. Make sure you get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
Apple Media is proud to celebrate 100 years as one of America's most influential radio stations and New York's first. WABC. And WLIR-FM Hampton Bays.
From around the world to around the block, this is a WABC 77 Second News Update.
Good morning, everyone. It is 2 a.m. in New York City. I'm Matt Sapienza. Here's what's going on in the world of news. Two high school students were slashed outside a public school complex in the Bronx. The Broadway musical Aladdin abruptly shut down tonight due to multiple positive coronavirus tests just a day after it reopened. Two teens steal a school bus in Canarsie, lose control, slam it into cars, including one with a person inside. Three New York nurses are in court today, suing to stop the vaccine mandate on religious grounds. And breaking Britney news, Father Jamie Spears has been suspended as conservator, with a CPA tapped to do the job in the interim. Sports, the Yankees lost to the Blue Jays 6-5, the Mets lost to the Marlins 3-2. Before the Frank Morano Show resumes, a check on your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Partly cloudy skies today with a high of 67. Tomorrow, it's going to be a much different story. It's going to be a beautiful start to the weekend, mainly sunny, with a high near 69. Right now in New York City, it is 61 degrees under cloudy skies. And that's your 77-second news update. I'm Matt Sapienza. Don't go anywhere. We got Rudy Giuliani and much more this hour on the other side of midnight with Frank Morano. Next news, when it happens on WABC, AM and FM, New York.
77 WABC. Hi, everybody. I'm Jack Hanna. Since I was a boy growing up on a farm in Tennessee, I've been fascinated with animals. I'm not only in awe of their beauty and kindness, but also their tireless work ethic. Just look at the birds who gather supplies to build nests, or Swiss foxes who work hard to provide for their young, or penguins who travel up to 500 miles to secure food for their families, or bush babies whose impressive jump allows them to navigate the trees in the wild in search of fruit. This remarkable work ethic is shared by our best friends, the canines. We know dogs are our wonderful pets at home, but because of their acute senses, they also perform life-saving work every day. Dogs keep us safe at airports. They comfort returning veterans, some of whom suffer from PTS. They work with diabetics, alerting them when there's a change in their blood chemistry. Working dogs have a variety of highly trained roles that contribute to society and help those in need. So please join me, an American Humane, in supporting our heroic working dogs and all the amazing animals on this planet we inhabit together. Go to AmericanHumane.org to learn more.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Coming up at 2:30, we're going to talk with America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani. Looking forward to that conversation. We're going to talk about Rikers Island and a host of other things. But first, I have a very important question for our listeners in the Hudson Valley. If you live in the Hudson Valley, and I like the Hudson Valley, I've spent a little bit of time in the Hudson Valley when I was very involved in New York politics. I mean, I'm still semi-involved, but when I was involved in leadership of different political parties and so forth, I would go out there and do some campaigning. When I was working in minor league baseball, I would go out there to see the Hudson Valley Renegades, a great, great little ballpark out there, great experience. Story from July that I've had in my stack of stuff since then. Now that this from Discovery Plus, there's an all-new documentary called Alien Invasion Hudson Valley. Now, I haven't seen this, but it's been available since August 15th on Discovery Plus. I'm going to try and get the filmmakers on this show. And now that the U.S. government can no longer deny the existence of UFOs, eyewitnesses feel emboldened to share their story, and there's a renewed hope that we may learn the truth about whether we've been visited by extraterrestrials. So the latest installment of this Shock Docs franchise, Alien Invasion Hudson Valley, which is currently streaming on Discovery Plus, it follows an in-depth investigation into this alien epicenter to help residents of the Hudson Valley, New York, find explanations for their unearthly and sometimes violent encounters. So we've all heard about Area 51. I don't know that many people have heard of the experiences with respect to aliens that folks are having in the Hudson Valley, just north of New York City. The Hudson Valley, believe it or not, remains the undisputed UFO capital of the world. Listen to this. They have reported nearly 3,000 extraterrestrial encounters over the last decade. So the team leading this new investigation into the region includes a former federal agent and a number of other experts. And throughout this two-hour special, which I'm very much looking forward to watching, maybe I can see it on Saturday, maybe Saturday or Sunday. Throughout this two-hour special, this team that they've put together takes an innovative approach to investigating extraterrestrials by utilizing paranormal equipment and techniques to deliver some pretty interesting results. At least that's what it's billed as. This unique investigation method leads to messages from beyond, chilling first-person accounts, and overwhelming video evidence. So why are aliens descending on the Hudson Valley? If you live there, I'd be quite curious to know. Also, I'd be curious if you've seen one of these 3,000 reported encounters. 800-848-WABC. Let me know. 800-848-9222. And what do the aliens want from the residents of the Hudson Valley? So the team's investigation is anchored by firsthand experiences, but they also talk to experts and others. So I'm looking forward to seeing this. I'm not sure if I get Discovery Plus. I think that's one of those streaming networks that it comes with something else that I have. I know I haven't made an affirmative decision to purchase Discovery Plus, but I feel like I'm paying for so much stuff that it's got to come with something. But I don't know. Give me a call if you're in the Hudson Valley and you're not currently a party to an alien abduction. 800-848-WABC. Now, meantime, for the last month, I have had this annoying cough. And it's just the cough is just about done. I still find myself coughing a bit. And when I cough, I feel like my left lung vibrates a little bit. And I researched this. And the worst thing you could ever do is research for any sort of health ailment that you have, because immediately whatever comes up, you think you're dying, right? So it looks like I have some sort of bronchitis. Looks like I had a cold 2 or 3 months ago, and this bronchitis has stayed with me. But I am seeing that when I wake up, I have this this post-nasal drip. And I researched things. You know, I'm not a guy that likes to run to the doctor. I don't like to take medication. But I was researching ways to treat this. And a lot of the popular methods involve having a lot of fluids. And I was reading yesterday or today, I don't know, whatever you want to consider it, that you should sleep propped up on a pillow so that you don't have, I don't want to be gross, but you don't have mucus going into the back of your throat. So I think I may try that when I get home this morning and see if that helps. Because, again, it's not painful. It's just annoying. I'm in the middle of a 5 hours of radio to stop every 10 minutes to turn my microphone off so I could cough like Doris from Rego Park. It's not something I really want to do. So if you have a thought on that or on the thought of aliens in the Hudson Valley, give me a call, 800-848-9222. You're also welcome to respond to my conversation with Paula Poundstone, 800-848-WABC. Mayor Rudy Giuliani joining me in about 20 minutes. First, let me say hello to Carmen in Brooklyn. Hello, Carmen.
Yeah, hi. How are you, Frankie? So I think I know what you have, because I had the same thing. You have a dry cough, and I think you should. First of all, you should feel better, and you should take MD Mucinex if you have that wet cough, and if you have that dry cough, is Delsym.
Well, so it is dry. It is dry. So what am I taking for a dry cough?
So for the dry cough, I started taking it tonight. It's called Delsym. It's a great product.
Spell it for me, Carmen. Carmen, spell it for me.
Delsem, Delsem, D-E-L-S-E-M.
D-E-L-S-E-M, and it's non-prescription, it's over-the-counter.
Non-prescription, over-the-counter. It's like a syrup, and it's going to soothe your throat. Amazing.
Now, if I take this, because I've taken other cough syrups that have worked, the best one that I've ever tried is one called Buckley's Cough Mixture, but you take a cough medicine, and then the cough goes away for a little while, and then it comes back. If I take the Dalsam for my dry cough, does it make it go away, or will it come back in 5 hours?
It makes it go away. I picked it up, a matter of fact, in Brooklyn.
Really?
I spoke to the drug, and he said, take the Dalsam. Don't take the Mucinex, and it will really help your – within a week, it'll be gone.
Well, I will check this out. I'll pick some up today. Carmen, thank you for the advice.
And also, it's also a lot of hot tea, like mint tea with lemon.
Well, I do that. I do that, and I do find it helpful, but I will try this Dalsam. Thank you, Carmen. 800-848-WABC. Joe is in New Jersey. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Frankie, I haven't talked to you since you were on Joe Piscopo. I got the same thing. You know what you do? You take warm liquids, take honey. I think that's about your best bet. You get that little tickle in the back of your throat, and I also got bronchitis too. Then it goes right down into your lung. You know, that's how you get the bronchitis too. That's what you do. You take hot stuff and get that tickle away. I get it from time to time. You're going to have to live with it. Probably comes from the sinuses.
Well, that's the way it does appear that way, that it is sinus-based. But thank you for the call, Joe. It's good to talk to you again. I do like the Carmen solution more than yours because he makes it sound like I could pop a couple of these Dalsam tablets and I'm as good as cured. And that's what I'm looking for here. I'm looking for an easy way out. I'm looking for a magic bullet. Looking for a cure. Pop a couple of Dalsams and move on with my life. Meantime, talking about this Discovery Plus show, which shows alien experiences in the Hudson Valley like crazy. 800-848-WABC if you know anything about that. Or if you've seen the special, I'd be curious as to your review of it. Ann is in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Hello, Ann.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I used to live in the New York area, but I get the app, the WABC app, so I listen to you sometimes at night. And I lived in Hudson Valley, the Hudson Valley area. I lived in Cortland Manor, but I had friends that used to live up in Pine Bush. And Pine Bush, which I believe is also part of the Hudson Valley region, is noted for its flying saucers. And I thought that was rather interesting, and I used to speak to my friends there when I used to go up and visit them. And ask them why they, she says, yeah, it's noted for its flying saucers. And they have a lot of open fields there. And they say that the flying saucers go into that area. They even have a diner up there that they named after, called the Flying Saucer or something, some sort of diner.
Right. You're right about that. And I have seen that. And I've seen some articles about Pine Bush, which you're right, is in the Hudson Valley, being so rich in alien activity. I guess my question, Anne, is why? Is it just a marketing ploy on the part of the Pine Bush people, or are there actually more UFO incidents in that community?
Well, I don't really know because I never lived up there, but I asked them about it. I said, it's kind of a fascinating. Why? Because I was fascinated by it when I would go up and visit them from the Cortland Manor area. I was a little bit further south, about an hour or so further south in Westchester County. And I would ask them, and they says, no, people have seen sightings in the huge open fields out there. They have a lot of open fields, rural area, and they even have a parade every year celebrating the flying saucers. They dress up in flying saucer outfits.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I didn't know that. We may have to go out there for that parade, Ann.
Yeah, they have a little parade that they have. I said, really? I thought it was kind of funny, but they told me that. They said, yeah, they have a parade in Pine Bush where they dress up in flying saucer alien outfits, and they have this little parade, and they celebrate in the little downtown area that they have. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty neat as well. Thank you for sharing that, Ann. 800-848-WABC. Gina is in Brooklyn. Gina, what do I do about the tickle in the back of my throat?
Hi, Frank. Frank, you might not like this, but I do this, and it really helps me because I have it too. And I've had bronchitis repeatedly my entire life. I squeeze the juice of a lemon every morning, and I add water and a little Truvia. You know, that kind of sugar from stevia.
Yeah, sure.
And I add water, and I drink that. And it's pure vitamin C, according to the holistic doctors. And I'll tell you, I'm doing very well, and I'm not a kid. And I'm feeling great.
So do I drink that, or I gargle with it?
Yeah. No, drink it. It's pure vitamin C from a lemon. Instead of getting like that ascorbic acid from a vitamin C tablet, like a vitamin thing, this is the pure vitamin C, and it's really helping me. So I hope it helps you.
All right, I'll give it a shot. I have lemon, I have Truvia, and certainly I can get my hands on some hot water. I'll give it a shot. Thank you, Gina. 800-848-WABC. Neil is on Staten Island. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Frank, I had the same thing as you. I got this lousy cough for a month with the postnasal drip. At first, I thought I had COVID with the coughing, so I got tested and tested negative. And today I went for my annual, so I saw the doctor, and he gave me an antibiotic. He said he believes that'll help me out immensely. He gave me something called doxycycline. So hopefully he's right.
Well, I'm reluctant to take it because they say a lot of these bronchial infections are not bacterial. They're viral, like from a cold. And an antibiotic, supposedly, you're not supposed to take that with a viral infection. You're supposed to take it with a bacterial infection, something like strep throat. So I'm always a little reluctant to overdo it with the antibiotics. But if this doesn't go away in maybe a week or so, and if these other remedies that people are suggesting don't work, then I may have to go to the doctor and see what they say. Harriet is in Sheepshead Bay. Hello, Harriet.
Oh, hi, Frank. It's very nice to speak with you.
Thank you.
The thing is, I remember I worked in a report with Victor Zell years ago, and I researched this homeopathic stuff. There's a product called UMCKA Cold Care. It's made from a root from South Africa, and what it does is it relieves deep-seated bronchitis and infections, long-term infections and things that are, you know, that fester in your lungs. And you really should try that. A good place to get it is the Wilner Chemist. It's made by Nature's Way. It's called UMCKA Cold Care. And I think it should really cure you because it cured me.
UMCK Cold Care.
A. Right. Cold Care. It shortens the duration and reduces severity of nasal and bronchial irritations, congestion, sore throat, cough, you name it. It's one of these great homeopathic remedies.
Well, it sounds pretty good to me, Harriet. I'll give it a shot. Thank you for the suggestion. Thank you for listening. And thank you for calling 800-848-9222. Let me pause here, and those of you that are holding, we will get to you. But America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani, is waiting in the wings, and we're grateful that he is certainly a night owl. But before we get to America's mayor, I do want to tell you a little bit about inflation. Inflation is skyrocketing. Inflation is out of control. What can you do about it? Not much. Not much, but you can help preserve your retirement funds. If your money is sitting in a traditional retirement account, seeing what's happening with inflation, you just have to kind of throw your arms up in the air and shake your head. It's bad. So what do? Well, you have to think about rolling your money into a gold or a silver IRA. And you should do it with legacy precious metals. In 2008, when the stock market collapsed and Americans lost their retirement, those that were invested in gold saw huge gains and avoided the financial carnage. That's why gold really should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio. Legacy Precious Metals is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased counsel based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Call, write this number down, please, 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or you can visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
A long, long time ago.
This is The Other Side of Midnight on 77 WABC. I'm Frank Morano. I'll tell you, one of the things about working in radio that is just such a treat is you get to interact with and sometimes even work with people that you've admired for many, many years, such is the case with our next guest. He's somebody that I and so many New Yorkers, so many Americans have looked up to and admired for the last three decades. And each and every afternoon, we have the privilege of hearing his wit and wisdom right here on this radio station at 3 p.m. He is America's mayor, not only the former two-term mayor of New York City, not only the former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, but the former attorney for President Donald Trump, and somebody that we're pretty thankful is a night owl, Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Mr. Mayor, thanks so much for joining me.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be with you, Frank. I listened to you, and I listened to you even before I was on.
So, Mayor, I got to ask, you know, there's been so much written about your sleep schedules over the years and the sleep schedule of people like Bill Clinton, who sleep for 3, 4, 5 hours. When are you sleeping? How are you as productive as you are on as little sleep as you get?
Well, I'm not sure. Well, first of all, I sleep at night. The average would be 4 hours, maybe. But then when I can, if I get an opportunity, I'll take a nap sometimes during the day if I'm somewhere where I can do it, like when I travel. I'm a terrific napper. I can even do it at night when I come home. So, and then sometimes on a weekend, I'll sleep like 7 or 8 hours. Once I've slept 7 or 8 hours, then I can't sleep for two more nights.
It sounds like you get about as much sleep in a week as Mayor de Blasio gets in half a day. So,
There is a big difference there, and I usually show up on time rather than 2 hours late.
But it's so funny that you mentioned the issue of showing up. A week or two ago, I know you're kind enough to listen to the program, I played for the audience an interview that you did with Channel 13 on John Lindsay, a documentary that you were a part of for John Lindsay, and you talked about a little advice that he gave you before you became mayor, and you said that the best piece of advice that he gave you was that if you wanted something done as mayor, you'd go there. And that would basically focus the entire energy and the entire administrative apparatus of city government on wherever the mayor was. And I was critical of de Blasio for not showing up to Rikers. He finally showed up to Rikers, but then he didn't meet with any inmates or any correction officers. I have to wonder, what did he do down there?
I don't know where he came from. I really don't. If you wanted to write a book about, let's write a fictional book about the worst mayor in the history of the world, and then he would have all the characteristics of Bill de Blasio, every single one, including ideology. But put ideology aside, how he hasn't been there by now. I went to Rikers Island every Christmas. If I couldn't make it on Christmas Day, I'd do it the day before or the day after. Or sometimes I do it on New Year's. I would do it for the correction officers in part, and bring them like Christmas cookies or something. But then I would talk to the inmates. Now look, I was a prosecutor and a criminal defense lawyer, so I was more comfortable with that. But I don't understand how you don't talk to you don't have to talk to the worst ones, but in every prison, and the correction people know it, they're sort of like representatives of the prisoners. The people who speak for them. So you talk to them. You find out, what do they think? Now, they may even lie to you, but at least there's that interchange with them, right?
Right. And no question about it.
And I love these liberals. I mean, supposedly they care about criminals and how they're treated in jail. Now, I put a hell of a lot more people in jail than they did. That was three times as many people in Rikers when I was there. But I cared about the people who were there. I didn't want them. Yes, they were being punished. Yes, they had to be held. But I don't believe in punishment beyond that. You shouldn't be tortured in jail. We're not, after all, we're not China.
Well, you talk about the Rikers.
They're such phonies. The liberals are such phonies.
So you talk about the Rikers inmate population. Around the time that you were mayor, there were more than twice as many inmates at Rikers as there are now. And yet, in spite of the fact that there were twice as many inmates, more than twice, there were only half as many incidents of stabbings and slashings among inmates. So my question is, even though the population at Rikers is less than half, the incidents of violence are more than double, not only among inmates, but on inmates attacking COs. What is the current leadership of the corrections department doing differently than what you did when you were mayor?
You know, I don't really know. Actually, it's interesting. In the next day or two, probably on Friday, I'm going to interview Bernie Carrick about this. Now, Bernie is best known for being police commissioner. But before he was police commissioner, he was corrections commissioner. And you know those numbers you're talking about? He actually reduced violence 90% over a four-year period in the corrections department using a variation of our CompStat program. And I would say, you know, when I started, Rikers was the worst jail in the country. It was still better than it is right now. It's hard to believe, right?
Oh, no.
It was the worst jail in the country. When Bernie was finished with it, it was one of the best. And we gave it to Bloomberg that way. And I have no reason to believe that Bloomberg changed it significantly. I mean, the one thing Bloomberg did do was he kept all the things we did going pretty much and improved on some of them. He was a good manager. I mean, I don't know the corrections people. When you have terrible management like de Blasio, it kind of rots from the top, the head, you know, head, the body rots from the top. And when you have management that doesn't show up, doesn't care, doesn't evaluate, isn't involved, doesn't talk to you, it falls apart unless you're a very unusual person. I mean, it isn't accidental that corrections is not the only place that's a disaster, right? Board of Education, now this isn't his fault. Board of Education's always been terrible. But under him, it's like a clown show.
Right. Well, it would be difficult to look at the chancellors that he's appointed and say those are people that have moved the needle in the right direction. But you can imagine how different the media coverage would be if there were a dozen inmates dying at Rikers when you were mayor, as opposed to the dozen inmates that have died there.
I'd immediately be called a racist. I'd be called a racist, and I didn't care about the people at Rikers because, a higher percentage of them are African-American. So I really didn't care about them. But I wasn't called a person who knows how to combat racism when I saved more African-American lives than any mayor. No one ever noted that, by the way, except me and Bernie.
That's certainly for sure. Speaking of the leadership in this city, obviously we have a mayor's race coming up. You and I are both supporting Curtis Sliwa. A lot of people credit your support of Curtis Sliwa for his landslide win in the Republican primary. A lot of the press is already treating the mayor's race as if it's sort of a fait accompli. It's a done deal. Even the New York Post, which is generally a conservative newspaper, they're treating Eric Adams as if he's the mayor in waiting. You've been through a couple of tough mayor's races. You lost one, won a couple. And I'm curious, based on your analysis of the mayor's race, do you think what the pundits are saying is true? Is the mayor's race a done deal, or does Curtis still have a fighting shot?
He has a fighting shot, but they're making it very, very difficult. And there's no reason for it to be treated that way. And it's worse than when I ran. I got more attention than Curtis is getting. And I didn't have a great deal of money, particularly the first time we ran, because it's gotten worse. I think what the Post is reflecting, of course the Post would rather have Curtis as the mayor. They're reflecting the almost it becomes like a rule. Everybody tells me, a lot of people tell me, I'd rather have Curtis, but you can't have a Republican mayor here. I said, well, wait a second, is there a law? They said no.
You mean they'd rather have Adams?
No, No, they'd rather have Curtis.
I see.
A lot of people would rather have Curtis, but they'll say to me, I'm voting for Adams because he's really going to win.
Understood.
So I'll say to them, well, first of all, even if he's going to win, you don't have to vote for him. Right? I mean, he's going to win. Don't vote for him. Vote for Curtis. Let's see what happens. Number two, do you realize this is propaganda they have sold to you? If we just constantly say a Republican can't win, a Republican can't win. We just convince, you know, large numbers of people who probably aren't interested in politics quite the way we are, where you can do more thinking about it. They'll just say, oh, I like that Curtis, but he can't win. And I try very hard with Curtis and others. My son campaigns for him a lot to go around telling people when we start saying that, we become a dictatorship. When we start saying that the other party has no chance, we become a one party government. And look what happens to one party governments.
Right. What's the point of even having an election in that instance? Just go by whichever party has the majority. It's a real shame. Speaking of the mayor's race, it came out yesterday that Eric Adams is being advised and his people are being advised by ex-police chief Philip Banks, who stepped down a few years ago as part of a bribery scandal. Does that give you any pause about the kind of folks that Adams would have around him, that he would be having this sort of
sure, absolutely. Sure. Look, Adams is no doubt better than de Blasio, but that would apply to almost anybody in the city. I could go find 10 people walking the streets that are better than de Blasio. But never forget that he's a machine Democrat. The machine's crooked, right to the core. And de Blasio let it slip back there, by the way. I would say, you know, I became mayor after I prosecuted many people in conscious administration. And by the time I got there, we had a pretty clean city. I mean, the corruption scandals I had were all at a very low level. Building inspectors were my biggest nightmare. I prosecuted building inspectors when I was a U.S. attorney twice, like large numbers, like 20. And I thought, when I become mayor, they're going to be so scared, they're going to do everything right. I put a big system in. Then I ended up with my own building department scandal. Even I couldn't control it. I think by the end I did. So the point that I'm telling you is, if you don't fight against it, the city will go back to being corrupt. And if you're a machine Democrat like de Blasio, you don't fight against it. He's got plenty of corruption. He's got a totally inactive Department of Investigation. He's got DA's offices that have become processing centers for releasing prisoners. We don't really have DA's anymore. We have political hacks, like the one who's resigning in Manhattan, you know, who's been going after Trump for 5 years for tax evasion. I mean, isn't it ironic they've been looking at Trump for 5 years for tax evasion, and the guy they catch is Biden?
Oh, no. And you were the guy ringing.
That's hilarious. It's hilarious. They've gone through his tax return. They've probably spent 10,000 hours on his tax returns.
Right. You were the guy sounding the alarm on Hunter Biden for the last year and a half, and you were called the conspiracy theorist and every name in the
right.
book. And
God, Russian agent.
Right. Now you've been borne out on Hunter Biden, and a lot of the folks that have been trying to make an issue of President Trump's taxes, they're still looking for anything to that's criminal on that. But,
I wouldn't, if I was a prosecutor, invest a lot of time in his taxes, figure it's a waste of the taxpayers' money, particularly when we're setting records for increases in homicide and shootings. He's been audited by the IRS for 20 years. All they have to do is call the IRS and you'll find out they do multi-month audits of him. If they haven't found a criminal case in 20 years, believe me, there isn't one. The IRS is not corrupt. It may have at the top, an ideological bias, but they're not corrupt. So if there was fraud, they would refer it for prosecution. And boy, wouldn't they love to come up with a fraud case, even on the old Donald Trump.
Oh yeah.
They love getting celebrities.
Oh no, no doubt.
They kind of live on it. If they do have a weakness, their weaknesses. They like to do the celebrity cases, you know, the Martha Stewarts and Leon. I prosecuted Leona Helmsley, and there was a little bit of that there. I remember the New York Post broke the story. 100 people called my assistants that day, and they volunteered to testify against her. This had never happened before. Usually we have to work hard to get somebody to testify. You got to, you know, you have to get them to cooperate. And I warned my assistants. I said, half of those is probably going to be untrue because the woman is so hated. She had to be the most hated woman I ever. I prosecuted 2 Nazis. She was probably more hated than they were. It's crazy. But we really did get about maybe 50 people who were willing to testify. She did this. She did that. I don't think they can even identify
it. We're talking with former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani. You can hear him every afternoon at 3 p.m. right here on WABC, as well as hosting his own podcast, Common Sense. He's also terrific on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m., along with Dr. Maria Ryan. A lot of common sense on that show, and certainly a lot of listener interaction. Mayor, you were very complimentary for a dozen years of Mike Bloomberg. You had endorsed Mike Bloomberg. A lot of people credit you with helping get him elected in the first place. These days, Mayor Bloomberg is supporting Eric Adams. He's raising money for Eric Adams, even though Curtis campaigned for him multiple times and was very much a partner with him with the Guardian Angels and gave him a lot of
They were actually had a good relationship.
So does that make you think a bit less of Mayor Bloomberg and his sense of loyalty, the fact that he would back Eric Adams over Curtis Sliwa?
Yeah. I realize he changed parties. But in a situation like that, he should at least remain neutral. Let's assume he has a good relationship with Adams, too, or Adams backed him. I don't know. I think he did because he had Democratic support, too. I mean, so did I. He should remain in a situation like that where I had 2 people that supported me and they were equally as close. I remain neutral. Just stay out of it.
Yeah.
And what really disappoints me with Mike, and I take nothing away from the fact that I think he was a good mayor. And I particularly think I think most New Yorkers would, in comparison to what came later, because we can see what a bad mayor really is. It's the venom with which he attacked Donald Trump when he spoke at the Democratic convention. It's not real. He was friendly with Trump. They never had. I mean, there are people in this city who had problems with Trump, problems with me, personal problems, whatever. He wasn't one of them. So that is a bit of an act that, you know, Trump is one of the most disqualified people to ever be president. Mm-hmm. He's almost to the point of there's something emotionally wrong with him. I mean, I thought it was amazing today that General Milley, you know, had issues with sort of with Trump's emotional stability. And he's working for a guy who can't, you know, get out 3 sentences. And it doesn't seem to have a problem with that. You can't tell me when they sit with him, they don't walk out of that room gossiping about him. The White House. I know the White House. I know what they like. I see him on television. I see Biden on television. I know that he works about 4 hours a day. It's only about 4 hours in the Oval Office, which is unheard of. If you want to see proof of that, when he came here to New York for the UN gathering. So I'm very familiar with that. I policed it for 8 years mm-hmm. when I was mayor. And then I had to do a lot of security for it when I was U.S. attorney, because my boss, Ronald Reagan, would come and I'd always take charge of the security for him. I worked for him personally. I was his associate attorney general, worked with him in Washington. I was with him the day that he got shot before he went off to the hotel. I have a picture of it that was actually just published the other day.
Wow.
Of being with him, and I arrested Hinckley.
Well, I'm sure you're thrilled that he's getting out without any psychiatric supervision these days.
There should be supervision. I'm not opposed to his getting out because he was actually. I know sometimes people use insanity defenses as excuses. He was truly insane. The man really didn't know what the hell he was doing. And it didn't matter to him if he killed Reagan or Carter, or he could have waited. He could have waited for Clinton. I mean, he wanted to kill in order to impress Jodie Foster. Crazy though it sounds. I think he is pretty much, if he can be cured, cured, but he should be under surveillance. He should be wearing a bracelet. He should be having to check in constantly. That should go on for the rest of his life if you're going to give him the break of letting him out of jail.
Right. You'd think if you're mentally ill enough to shoot a president, you're probably mentally ill enough to warrant psychiatric supervision for the rest of your life.
I mean, I would be more comfortable if they kept him in, but I could live with their letting him out if they let him out under pretty strict surveillance, you know, where they're on top of him, like they should have done for that Brian guy. I mean, that was a terrible thing they did.
Mayor, you've been very generous with your time. Let me keep you two more minutes. I just have to ask you, I was talking about the Sopranos prequel that's coming out this week, The Many Saints of Newark. You're a big fan of The Sopranos, and a lot of people called me when I was talking about how great a television show this was and said, oh, well, it's a show that glorifies gangsterism. It's a show that people shouldn't be celebrating.
You are,
for people that don't know your history, probably America's number one, at least since Thomas Dewey, America's number one organized crime prosecutor. You were the one that brought the commission case in the Southern District. You're a big fan of The Sopranos. My wife is now watching the series for the first time. What would you say to people who think this is a show that is too glorifying towards criminals?
I think it's pretty realistic toward criminals. I mean, I found a lot of the organized crime movies, not all, but they're pretty darn realistic. I mean, if you want to be like them, there's something wrong with you. I mean, the guy lives under tremendous tension, right? The part of it that was funny at the beginning, never heard of an organized crime guy going to a psychiatrist. Giganti used to go around with his bathrobe on in the middle of Greenwich Village, so that when he got arrested, he could use the defense of insanity. And I used to say terrible things about him to irritate him. I guess I wanted to get killed or something. I don't know. I would go. I remember going on Bob Grant's show. If you remember Bob Grant,
Bob was a close friend. Absolutely.
And he kind of liked Father Giganti. I always had bad feelings about Father Giganti. I never bought the father thing, but he disliked Chin. So I used to go on, and with Grant, we would make fun of the Chin. I would say things like, Mafia, Bob, is supposed to be, you know, men of honor. We're men of honor. This guy's a man of honor. He walks around in his bathrobe. Oh, my God. What a disgrace. I'd throw him out.
So you're going to see the new film, though, needless to say.
Oh, how could I miss it? Well, first of all, I got to know those guys really well. I performed with them in the Inner Circle. My last Inner Circle, which is the show they do with the press and the mayor has to respond. And mayors, since John Lindsay, use a Broadway play to help them respond. And I think I took it more seriously than anybody. Maybe Koch and Lindsay. De Blasio and Bloomberg really didn't take it as seriously. So I performed like with Grease, the cast of Grease. Damn Yankees, of course. You could imagine how that would. Steinbrenner was in that with me. Trump was in that with me. Trump was in Victor Victoria with me. But Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King. But the last year I decided to write my own. It was called Godfather the Musical. And I played the Godfather. And in it, we spoof all the press, make fun of them. You know, a couple of hit jobs and stuff like that. And I have always found it terrific. And now, who helped me with it? The cast of The Sopranos. They all had the roles of the reporters. And then I had dinner with them. It also turns out that my agent for my book was the agent for James Gandolfini as well. And a 50% owner of The Godfather, which made him a multi-zillionaire, because when they brought it to, I believe it was ABC, ABC turned it down, saying there have been too many mafia movies. This was like 1996, 97. Too many mafia movies. So Brad Gray, who was my agent, who's since passed, unfortunately, and David Chase, who was the writer, are 50% owners. They raised the money on their own. They did their own production, and then HBO put it on. But they were co-owners of it with HBO. So think of all the money they made on the rebroadcasts of it, the videotapes, the, oh my God.
I can imagine. We're in the wrong business, Mayor.
Best decision ever made was that being thrown out by ABC. We don't want it.
That's for sure. Mayor Giuliani, I can't thank you enough for the time this morning.
You do great. I still don't understand it, but okay. you're going to sound like this early in the morning.
Mayor Rudy Giuliani, catch
all right,
him
take care.
Every afternoon at 3 p.m. and catch him every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. along with Dr. Maria Ryan. If you want to comment on any portion of our interview, give me a call at 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. That's Booker T and the MGs. My thanks to Mayor Rudy Giuliani. You want to comment on any portion of our conversation, give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. You know, got a couple of nice emails here with some different remedies for my post-nasal drip. Including Nikki, who writes, try and take a teaspoon, or she didn't specify how much, drink some vinegar, which I will try. I like to do vinegar anyway. I feel like it does a lot of good things for you. But several of the remedies involve either tea or hot liquid. Now, I'm all for hot tea. I drink hot tea. But there's a product that I want to tell you about that's not a hot tea, but a cold tea. And that is Life Change Tea. And it's a great product. It's an herbal proprietary formula that gives you more energy without caffeine. It tastes great. There's no fillers. There's no GMOs. It's completely organic. It's a mild cleanse, a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. There's no nothing artificial about it. Because you're getting all the garbage out of your system, the slogan is the tea that makes you go. You can go to the website, getthetea.com. I drink this stuff every day, getthetea.com. And if you use the promo code Frank when you order, you'll enjoy free shipping anywhere in the United States. It's getthetea.com, promo code Frank. And they sell a lot of other supplements on there as well. So in addition to the tea, you can get vitamin C, you can get vitamin B, you get all sorts of vitamins. You get supplements that help your digestion. Whatever you order on there, if you use the promo code Frank, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank. Straight to the phones we go at 1-800-848-WABC. Ralph is in Tarrytown. Hello, Ralph.
Hey, how you doing, Frank? Listen, there's a Hudson Valley. Okay, you might want to write this down, a Hudson Valley UFO Club. It meets at the Will Branch of the Yonkers Public Library either once or twice a month, and they have a good attendance, 20, 30 people at each meeting. It's a daytime meeting. I'll tell you how I know this. I inherited a telescope from someone. Actually, it was a gift. And I have an eye problem, so I didn't want to use it. And I had heard about this club about 5 years ago. I went there during a meeting, and I actually interrupted the meeting. I gave them the telescope, and they came up and looked at it. And I don't know who the manager or the director is, but a few of them came up, and they said, "This is wonderful. Why are you giving it to us?" I said, "So you could look up in the sky and see that there's nothing there." I wanted to provoke them. They went crazy. They're very devout. They showed me pictures. They wouldn't let me leave. So you might want to, that might be a source for you.
Well, that is interesting. I'll look into that. I don't know that I'll get to a meeting up there in Yonkers, but maybe there's somebody from the club that I can invite on the program to talk about.
That's what I meant.
I think it's a great idea, Ralph. I'll definitely check
and
that
they
out.
They were showing me lights in the sky.
That's cool.
And photographs and color, things that they have.
I'm all about it, Ralph. I think that's great. Thank you very much for the call. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I'll tell you what I find objectionable. And it's not the biggest issue in the world. But when you go to a restaurant, particularly an Italian restaurant, I went out to an Italian restaurant last night. My wife's brother, who lives in California, he's the only one that doesn't live on the East Coast. My wife's brother and his wife and their child are staying with us this week. So we figured we'd take them out to a nice Italian restaurant. It was a good restaurant. I'm not going to mention the name of it because I don't want to dog anybody. And the food is usually great there. And it's a great atmosphere and the owner's great. And I don't, you know, just because I have some mild criticism of it, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say anything negative against them. But I will tell you.
You know what really grinds my gears?
You order a drink, especially at an Italian restaurant, and it's clear that they don't know how to make it. Okay? So now one of my favorite drinks to drink, I have three standard drinks, right? I have a Bombay Sapphire Martini straight up with a twist. I have a bourbon neat, and I have a Negroni with Bombay Sapphire. A Negroni is a simple drink to make. A seven-year-old could make it. All it is, it's a very simple drink. Equal parts gin. You could use vodka too, but Bombay Sapphire gin in my case. Campari and sweet vermouth. Equal parts. Boom, boom, boom. In a rocks glass over ice. Drink is made. Ideally, you throw an orange peel in there as well. Boom, voila. So I order this Negroni, and the waiter gives me kind of a quizzical look. Okay, fine. So then they bring the drink back, and the drink is not served in a rocks glass or a tumbler glass. It's served in a martini glass. Now, as soon as they bring me a Negroni in a martini glass instead of a tumbler glass or a rocks glass, I know I'm done. I know I'm done because it's clear that they don't know how to make it. They just looked it up in a book somewhere. Oh, this is how you make a Negroni, and you see the three ingredients, and they make it like they make a martini. So they bring this drink back, and it was okay, but it just wasn't the same. It was not as it should be. There was not over ice. It was straight up, just as if you were drinking a martini. And I don't think anybody really drinks a Negroni straight up. I mean, you don't. You drink it over ice. Fine. And I made, I am the worst at deciding what to order. I will look at a menu for an hour and not be able to decide. Doesn't matter if you give me 5 minutes, 20 minutes, 45 minutes, I will get caught between 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 menu items and I can't pick, and especially in a nice Italian restaurant like this. And this restaurant had a whole bunch of seafood options, and I am a seafood fanatic. So I say to the waiter, What kind of fish should I get? Which of these seafood dishes should I get? And they had all sorts of interesting ones. And he says, get the bronzino. So now there's a lot of pressure to get the bronzino because I made the mistake of asking the waiter. So then I said, well, okay, I don't like it if it has bones in it. Is it filleted? Yes, it's filleted for you. Done. So I order the bronzino because the waiter recommended it. He brings the bronzino, which I never like, and I don't know why I ordered it. I never enjoy a bronzino, really. It's one of my least favorite fishes to order. And it's too salty. It had pesto sauce on it, which I normally love, and I thought maybe the combination of it being a white fish with pesto sauce, two of my favorite things, maybe that would be good. But it was way too salty. They serve it with a fish head on the plate, which I don't enjoy. And even though the Bronzino was filleted, it had these little pins in it, which I hate. And I didn't enjoy it at all. And I didn't end up finishing it, but I didn't want the waiter to feel bad. Now, I mean, it's ridiculous to think about. You're paying $31 for a piece of fish anyway. What are you concerned about the waiter's feelings? But I do. I felt bad because the waiter, he was so invested in this Bronzino recommendation. He kept coming over and saying, how is the Bronzino? How is the Bronzino? So I'm lying to him. I'm saying, oh, it's good. It's good. And then I'm not eating it because I'm not really enjoying it. I was kind of full because we had so many good appetizers, but I'm chopping it up on my dish to make it look like I've eaten more of it just because I don't want the waiter to feel bad. So I have to figure something out because I enjoy these waiter recommendations. However, there's a lot of pressure, A, to go with whatever the waiter recommends, and B, there's a lot of pressure to lie and pretend you like what he's recommending, just to be polite, because the waiter was a nice guy. Look, there are worse things in the world, but keep that in mind. If there's any, there's no way they should have like a seal of approval. You know how you go into a restaurant in New York and it has an A from the health department or a B or a not yet rated or whatever. They should have on there, we know how to make drinks. Or they should say, we don't know how to make drinks. Just stick with wine and beer. So there are certainly worse things. All right, next hour, we're going to talk crack and cocaine. Those of you that are up right now, maybe that's the reason why. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Until next hour, keep asking questions.
Red Apple Media is proud to celebrate 100 years as one of America's most influential radio stations and New York's first. WABC. And WLIR-FM, Hampton Bays.
From around the world to around the block, this is a WABC 77-second news update.
Good morning. It's 3 a.m. in New York City. I'm Matt Sapienza. Here's what's going on in the world of news. Two high school students were slashed outside a public school complex in the Bronx. The Broadway musical Aladdin abruptly shut down tonight due to multiple positive coronavirus tests just a day after it reopened. Two teens steal a school bus in Canarsie. They lose control. They slam it into cars, including one with a person inside. Three New York nurses in court today suing to stop the vaccine mandate on religious grounds. And breaking Britney news, Father Jamie Spears has been suspended as conservator with a CPA tapped to do the job in the interim. Sports, the Yankees lost to the Blue Jays 6-5. The Mets lost to the Marlins 3-2. Now let's get a check on your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center before the Frank Morano Show resumes. It's going to be partly cloudy today with a high near 67. Tomorrow, a much better day to start your weekend. It's going to be sunny for your Friday with a high near 70. Right now in New York City, it is 60 degrees under cloudy skies. And that's your 77-second news update. I'm Matt Sapienza. Don't go anywhere. The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano begins right now. Part 3, we got the AC report coming up and a whole lot more. Next news, when it happens on WABC, New York's radio station.
77 WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea. Let's go to press. There is, I've never done cocaine, never done crack. I've never even smoked a cigarette, quite honestly. The only substances that I've ever really tried have been alcohol and cigar and pipe tobacco. So I've never smoked marijuana, never done cocaine, never done crack, never done heroin, never taken any sort of pills of a pharmacological nature. But I've had many, many friends that have. And I've seen a lot of friends that have been able to do cocaine and just be fine and go on with their life. And I've seen other friends who have had serious problems with addiction because of one substance or another. So I take the issue of drug use very seriously, particularly if you look at what's happening in the country right now. We're seeing more people die of drug overdoses every year than died in the entire Vietnam War. And we saw it go down a little bit a couple of years ago. It was starting to tick downward, but then with the pandemic, it shot right back up and people are dying of drugs again. So there's a broad debate in this country about how to handle drug use and how to handle sentencing and how to handle treatment for drugs and how to handle the war on drugs in general. I do not want to delve into the debate about whether drugs should be legalized or not. I'm not going to do that right now. And it's out of the scope of the – it's beyond the scope of the conversation that I want to have. However, for the last 35 years or so, there has been a big problem with the sentencing laws in this country when it comes to – a certain type of drug, cocaine. In 1986, when everyone was trying to look tough on crime, a fellow you might have heard of called Joe Biden, he was a senator from Delaware at the time. For the life of me, I can't remember what became of him. He sponsored and wrote one of the toughest anti-drug laws in the country. The Anti-Drug Abuse Act. Now, this law was one of the most disastrous laws passed in the 1980s. Now, it was a great thing for lawmakers who wanted to posture as being tough on crime. But one of the things that it did was it created a 100 to 1 sentencing disparity between crack and powder cocaine offenders. Just survey of the people in the studio here. Matt, what's the difference between crack and cocaine?
I'm going to be totally honest with you. I have no idea.
Sure you know. That's why I'm smoking crack before he got here today. Molly, Sorry. I know you're a worldly young woman. What's the difference between crack and powdered cocaine?
Again, not my area of expertise.
All right, yeah. The two of you were
powder versus like a crystallized concentrated form.
Yeah, well, that's not necessarily wrong, but essentially, pharmacologically, there is no difference. Crack is essentially cocaine with heat and oxygen. That's it. There is no chemical difference beyond a little heat between crack and powdered cocaine. But what Joe Biden and the other tough on crime lawmakers wanted to do in the 1980s is they wanted to look tough on crime. So who's smoking crack in the 80s? Overwhelmingly, people possessing, smoking, selling crack, black people. And the most of the people enjoying powdered cocaine, they happen to be white. So the result was, keep in mind what I said, a 100-to-1 sentencing disparity for crack versus cocaine, even though it's the same substance. The result was that someone possessing 5 grams of crack cocaine would receive the same 5-year mandatory minimum sentence as someone with 500 100 grams of powdered cocaine, despite there being little to no pharmacological difference between the two substances. Now, because of that Biden anti-crime bill, the U.S. Sentencing Commission reported that black people made up nearly 77% of all federal crack cocaine convictions in 2020. Criminal justice advocates lobbied for decades to roll back this law because everyone knew it was unfair. So in 2007, President Obama, actually it was 2010, President Obama did something about this. He signed into law the Fair Sentencing Act, which reduced the sentencing disparity from 100 to 1 to 18 to 1. Huge step in the right direction. But it was only for new offenders. Didn't apply to anybody that was already in prison. Then 2018 comes around and our greatest criminal justice president, Donald Trump, signs into law the First Step Act, which was a bipartisan piece of legislation, one of the few bipartisan pieces of legislation that came out of the Trump era. And I'm not blaming the president for that. It's just kind of the nature of what the Trump era was like. Everyone was at loggerheads. And the First Step Act took what Obama did and it built on it. It said, all right, not only is this 18 to 1 sentencing the new standard instead of 100 to 1, but it's going to be retroactive. So everybody that's in prison now under the old sentencing, we're going to let you be resentenced and get a little bit of a break. That's why you had a situation, and I said this repeatedly during a campaign, nobody put more black people in prison than Joe Biden. Nobody let more black people out of prison than Donald Trump. Because of this crack to powdered cocaine disparity. But as we stand here now, it's still a little unfair. It's not as bad as it was in 1986 or prior to 2010. It's not a 100 to 1 disparity. It's an 18 to 1 disparity. Well, I love picking on Washington. And I love bashing the know-nothing, no-good, do-nothing bums that are in Congress from both sides. But this week, Congress did, the House of Representatives anyway, did something good. This week, the House of Representatives passed something called the Equal Act, which would erase once and for all the sentencing disparity between crack and powdered cocaine. And it was genuinely bipartisan, a wide bipartisan vote. 361 in favor, Democrats and Republicans, to 66 opposed. And not just voting in favor of it, you saw prominent progressive legislators like Hakeem Jeffries from here in New York speak very eloquently about the need to adjust this. You saw prominent conservative legislators like Congressman Louie Gohmert speak very eloquently about the need to repair this. Conservatives, liberals, they passed it. And now it heads to the U.S. Senate, where its future is far less certain. So we don't know what's going to happen in the U.S. Senate, but as it stands now, Chuck Grassley from Iowa, who just announced that he's running for re-election in spite of the fact that he's 88 years old, he has not yet indicated that he's going to be for this. So I want to give a little bit of a pat on the back to the House of Representatives. And I want to give a little bit of a nudge to the U.S. Senate. Members of both parties, they ought to pass this, and the president ought to sign it. There is no reason that if you go to prison for possession of crack, that you should be punished more harshly than someone that goes to prison for possession of powdered cocaine. No reason at all. I hate to say this because I'm not a guy that likes to insert race into everything. It's pure racism. It's pure racism. That's the only reason the crack disparity existed in the first place. Because these politicians like Joe Biden wanted to look like they were doing something. Hey, you know that scary black man that's ready to terrorize your neighborhood because he's hopped up on crack? Well, don't worry. We're going to send him to jail for 100 years. Meanwhile, he's holding the same drugs as the guy that's snorting coke in the back of a nightclub somewhere. So kudos to the House of Representatives, and I hope the U.S. Senate comes around. Now, Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, one of the staunchest defenders of mandatory minimum sentencing in Congress, he wrote an op-ed in National Review last week suggesting that the proper solution to the crack and powder cocaine sentencing disparity, if it must be changed, is to raise the sentences of powder cocaine offenses to match those of crack. I don't think that's the right solution. Criminal justice groups and civil liberties advocates, they've applauded the passage of this bill in the House. And I hope the Senate will do the right thing here. You're welcome to comment if you like. 800-848-9222. It's 1-800-848-WABC. Any other subject is fair game as well. We're going to do our AC report with Michael Traeger from TravelZork in just about 15 minutes. Now, Michael Traeger is an interesting guy. He is an expert in casino gambling, and he's been all over the world, Las Vegas, Macau, everywhere. And he just made a trip to Atlantic City, his first trip to Atlantic City in a long time. He's going to tell us what he thought of it, what he observed, and he's going to teach you some tricks about how you make the most out of your Atlantic City experience. 800-848-9222. Dara is in Saratoga. Hello, Dara.
Hi, Frank. Great topics as usual.
Thank you.
So, in the immortal words of a beloved but a very high Whitney Houston, I guess crack is whack. So, as this has been going, the truth has been known for decades about this topic, where crack was more of the raw form, and the cocaine was the processed form that most of the white people in the suburbs or in the party echelon have done. But I think this is a smokescreen, really, because what they're really not passing right now is that real legislation on criminal justice reform that has been kind of swept under the rug. And nobody wants to talk about that real change anymore. And I think that this is whack, what's going on right now, just to cover up the fact that they never passed the legislation that, or they're not going to pass the legislation that everyone really needs. But I really call to hearken back on something. And I know that Mr. Giuliani is a friend of the station, but he's not entitled to his own facts, okay? So in 2006, the New York Times did an expose on Rikers, and I want to bring out some terms, the Dural million-dollar doors. So these were security doors that were bought for Rikers that were never used. They were never installed. No one knows where they went, and no one knows where the money went. So if we're going to have Mr. Giuliani and allow him to tout all his facts about Rikers, Rikers is the Afghanistan of New York City. Lots of time, lots of lives, lots of money, but there's no accounting for it. And it's got to stop. And if we remember, these Dural doors, guess who sat on the board of Dural at the time these doors were purchased?
The board of what?
Dural. D-E-O-R-A-L.
Is that the firm that Bernie Kerik was on the board of?
Yeah, that's right. So let's tell the truth about Rikers. Tell the truth.
Yeah, no. Well, okay? Again, I don't think there's anything wrong with bringing that up. But I think it's a little unfair to blame Mayor Giuliani for some poor management of the jail system in 2006 when he was not the mayor anymore.
But these were discovered in 2006. These were purchases that were made when Kerik was the commissioner, before he was commissioner of police, but in charge of Rikers. And guess who he worked for at the time? So Giuliani has to start telling the truth about his life. And I think if he started telling the truth about his life, it would heal his soul and endear him back to the people again.
Dara, but I mean, again, there were a fraction of the number of stabbings in 1998, 1999, in spite of the fact that the inmate population was doubled. I mean, doesn't that give the Giuliani-Kerik leadership team some degree of credibility that even though that there's half as many inmates, fewer than half, the number of stashings and stabbings and slashings is more than double? Doesn't that show that something's going wrong there now?
Frank, review your history. Go back in the archives. I know you have a show, and this is for entertainment purposes, but deep down, I know you're a very good journalist.
But what did I say that was inaccurate just now?
Well, because it's a numbers game. These numbers have been disputed for decades. And if you do the real research, these numbers have always been disputed. And the police department does the same thing in New York City. They skew the numbers. You know, one year the criteria for
What do you think the accurate reflection of stabbings in the year 2000 was, for instance?
You see, you're turning it to stabbings. My point is about the graft and the crime and the corruption. And by the way, this is the same period of time that led to Bernie Kerik's demise, which is why he went to prison. And no Trump pardon will ever erase.
Hang on, Dara. I think you're conflating a number of issues. One, Bernie Kerik went to prison for a combination of lying about hiring a nanny and not paying taxes on her, accepting renovations on his apartment in the Bronx, and not
the indictment.
Yes, no, I have. I have. I have.
The nanny was not used in the indictment.
No, well,
something that Kerik says.
Well, no, but
there's no nanny in the indictment. No, now that words were never spoken. Well, he went to prison for lying to the government. And one of these deals,
right, well, I just said, lying.
Backdoor deals are one of them.
Well, okay. So as I was saying, so the behavior that Kerik went to prison for was not at all, whether it's the renovations on his apartment, the lying while he was being vetted for Homeland Security, that had nothing to do with his leadership of the Department of Corrections.
But it had everything to do, Frank, because it was the beginning of the end. It's the character of the people in here.
Well, but Dara, I know you want to dismiss the numbers, but at some point, some of these numbers you can't dismiss. So let's say you want to dismiss the stabbings and slashings. Okay. Let's say you want to forget about the fact that there's a dozen dead inmates this year, which is more than we've had in the last two decades. Okay. You then have to deal with the excessive rates of absenteeism among correction officers and sick time among correction officers that we're seeing now, which weren't present 20 years ago. So again, I mean, you can dismiss as many of the numbers as you want, but I think any metric you go by, Rikers is more poorly run now than it was 22 years ago. And it doesn't mean you have to like Rudy Giuliani or Bernie Kerik to acknowledge that. But if you want Rudy Giuliani and Bernie Kerik to be honest, I think you have to be honest in terms of evaluating exactly how chaotic it is at Rikers right now. And I think part of the reason why, and I think you heard that from the mayor, is that Mayor de Blasio clearly did not make this a priority. He visited Rikers for the first time last week, whereas Rudy Giuliani used to go there every Christmas.
I don't think that Christmas visits are going to cure this. And I agree with you on your point about de Blasio. That's why I say Rikers is New York City's Afghanistan, because no matter who's at the helm, this place needs to be shut down. It needs to be stopped, whether we count it in lives or statistics. It's not who was better, who did better. Okay, because you know what? Kerik could step up and volunteer his time to clean it up, but nobody wants him. Why? Because he was corrupt. So this is a land of corruption and death. It needs to be closed.
That's okay, so let's say we close it, right? Let's say we close Rikers and we go with this plan of four new borough-based jails. How will new jails and shutting down Rikers, how will that lead to a decrease in the incidence of violence that we're seeing in the Department of Corrections today?
It will depend on who's at the helm.
Right. It seems because to me, what it looks like, if you have the same management team, it looks like you're just expanding the chaos that's in Rikers now. You're expanding it to the four other jails.
No, I agree with you on the point. De Blasio he's clueless. It's not on the top of his agenda at all. He's terrible when it comes to this sort of thing. And maybe he should be out for that reason. However, decentralizing this jail and putting the right people at the helm and clean it from the top, because my point is that since 2006, whether this jail looks pretty on the outside and is rotten on the inside, or is rotten on the outside and all the money is going on the inside, it needs this really, what we need to do is defund Rikers.
I appreciate the call, Dara, but I completely disagree. I think that what the previous governor, Andrew Cuomo, did, and what the mayor did in putting an end to punitive segregation has been a disaster. It has been an absolute disaster. If you look at the fact that the number of people that have been released from Rikers, it's now made Rikers a haven for the worst of the worst. To not get bail right now and to still be at Rikers, you have to be, in most instances, a pretty hardened criminal. And what the mayor and the governor have done is they claim that it's because the correction officers, who work very hard, have created a culture of violence. Nothing could be further from the truth. I've been to Rikers. Unlike the mayor, I've spoken with COs at Rikers. I've spoken with inmates at Rikers. I've had friends locked up at Rikers. And instead, what the mayor has done and the previous governor, instead of actually trying to solve this problem, and again, I don't know how you just kind of dismiss the success of the Giuliani era on this one. They've scapegoated a group of people, correction officers, who have an extremely difficult job. We should be thanking them and praising the work we're doing. And the guy that should be at the front of the parade thanking them is the mayor, whoever the mayor is. Not the other way around. If the mayor doesn't know how to administer safe jails, then give us someone who can. I would offer to you that a person that did know how to administer safe jails was Bernie Kerik. So the kind of people that the mayor de Blasio has put in, people like Commissioner Ponte, they have so many failures, and it makes, I mean, but that's not unique to corrections. If you look at what de Blasio's done at ACS, if you look at what he's done at the Department of Homeland Services, if you look at what he's done to the police department, if you look at what he's done to the education system in the city, it's pandemic incompetence. The concern that citizens and police officers alike have with what the mayor is doing, which is shutting down Rikers and setting up four borough-based jails, is what we're talking about is a prison population reduction with no plan in place. So essentially, we're just going to open the door, and we've already begun this, and let the people who should be incarcerated out on the street. Remember police officer Randolph Holder? He was killed by someone who should not have been out on the streets in the first place. The EMT that was killed with her own ambulance was killed by someone who was arrested 31 times and shouldn't have been on the street in the first place. By randomly deciding that we need 4,000 to 5,000 more inmates on the streets without a plan in place, this guarantees that incidents like this are going to be more prevalent. And they've already become more prevalent. And I know Dara was not impressed with statistics, but these statistics are real people. If you get stabbed, if you get slashed, if you get assaulted, if you die, that's a number that means something. In the 8 years that Mayor Giuliani was in office, Rikers, as Giuliani said, started out as a complete mess. And still, it was not as bad as it is now, as Giuliani said. The front page of New York Magazine in 1994 said that Rikers was about to explode. Daily population of 20 to 22,000. What happened? A 93% reduction in slashings and stabbings. 72% reduction in serious use of force incidents. That's good for the COs. That's good for the inmates. 48% reduction in assaults on staff. 50% increase in weapons seized. All the while, with a 33% decrease in overtime spending. Now, those are not numbers that you can make up. So in just a few years, they turned Rikers into an international model for efficiency and accountability. It resulted in fewer inmates being hurt, fewer officers being hurt. The key was accountability. Now, there's no accountability. There's no accountability. I don't mind your description of Rikers being the New York City version of Afghanistan, because in Afghanistan, a lot of the mismanagement of that war, there was no accountability. We're going to talk Atlantic City with Michael Traeger in just a minute. 800-848-9222. Steve is in Bethpage. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Frank. I listened to your show. I came in late. I'm a retired New York City correction officer. I worked for over 25 years. I started in 88, and I retired in 13. That lady, Daria, has no idea what she's talking about. I was there during the tenure of I started with Mayor Koch, then it went to Dinkins and Giuliani. The island was much safer back then because of punitive segregation that separates the more violent inmates from other inmates. They're the problem guys. We put them in for 23-hour lock-in. They get 1 hour of recreation. There's some inmates that wanted to go to segregation because they didn't want to be in population, because criminals have problems with other criminals. And they always called Rikers Island the jail with the street with a roof on top. So all the inmates were all together. They used to let us do a lot more searching, and we'd come up with more weapons. When inmates don't have weapons or narcotics, things are a lot better. But when the people that de Blasio appointed, and that's when I was leaving, they house inmates by gang affiliation, which is bad. So they have a lot of, that's why there's a lot of trouble with that. The people that they have running the department now are clueless, and it's really bad. I still talk to people that are working there now, and it's truly a nightmare. And he hasn't hired anybody in over 3 years. So that coupled with the violence, the assaults on staff, COVID, quite a number of correction officers who died because of COVID, which never is reported.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a big problem. And if you look at and I appreciate your service to the city, Steve, and the call. If you look at the problem inmates, right? The 17 to 21 year old population is responsible for more than 30% of the violence that goes on at Rikers. And yet, there's no disciplinary measure for these people at all under the current term. So how could things improve? They can't. That's why things have gotten worse, in part. 800-848-9222. John in Staten Island, very quickly, John.
Oh, Frank, it's a question. We're going through this thing for how many years? Giuliani cleaned the city. After Giuliani left, we had Bloomberg. Who's the public advocate for Bloomberg? De Blasio. Who's the guy who's like throwing everybody out? De Blasio. And what's Bloomberg doing? Spent $1 billion throughout the last president to get everybody out. Who's doing what? Tell me the answer to that.
Well, I can't, John. And I just, and again, I don't want to make this a political issue, but I think if you're going to say that, you know, somehow Giuliani is not entitled to offer some words of wisdom on Rikers and tout his own records on Rikers, I think that's I don't think that's true. I think that's a little unfair. Joe and Ronkonkoma, very quickly. Hello.
Really quick, Frank. Great show. I sit at the school bus with a female African-American correction officer, and all she does, they've thrown her. She says it's out of control. She started when Giuliani was in. It was very, very, ran perfectly, she was saying. Now it is like the zoo. And that woman before had no clue what she was saying. And I agree with you 100%, Frank. You're totally right with everything that you were saying. So have a great night.
Thank you, Joe. And we're going to talk with Michael Traeger from Travel Zork in just a minute. Very eager to hear how his trip to Atlantic City went. But first, if you don't win big in Atlantic City, then you're going to have to worry about inflation like the rest of us. So if your money is sitting in a traditional retirement account, it's getting eaten away right under your nose. Have you seen what we are experiencing in terms of inflation? Food is at a 50-year high, the price of food. You try and fill up your gas tank, that'll tell you where we are with inflation these days. So that means if you have your money sitting in a traditional retirement account, you are up the creek without a paddle. But there is a solution. Gold and precious metals. They offer a hedge against inflation and protect your retirement. If you have an existing retirement account, think about rolling it into a gold or a silver IRA and think about doing it with legacy precious metals. The last time the stock market collapsed and Americans lost their retirement, those that were invested in gold saw huge gains and avoided the financial carnage. That's why gold really should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio. It's part of mine. It's a company that Legacy Precious Metals is a company that you can trust because they give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Write this number down, please. 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or visit legacypminvestments.com.
You're hearing things. On 77 WABC.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC. This is the AC Report.
Chicken man in Philly last night, and they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk, they're ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble on the promenade, and the gambling commissioner's hanging on by the skin of his teeth. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday he comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlanta.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. It's time for our weekly look at what's happening in America's playground, the Monopoly City, Atlantic City. I'm going to be there on Friday. I was a little bummed that I wasn't there last week because our next guest, somebody that knows the ins and outs of the gambling business as well as anybody, made a return trip to Atlantic City for the first time in a while, and I would have loved to spend a little bit of time shooting dice with him at the craps table, but it's just as well because we get to enjoy the fruits of his dice-throwing labor here on the radio. Michael Traeger is a luxury travel and casino gaming industry entrepreneur, and he is with a website called TravelZork.com. Michael, thanks as always for joining me on the radio.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
The pleasure's all mine. So remind folks who haven't heard our previous discussions, Michael, in a nutshell, what is TravelZork.com?
It is basically a site that's set up for the recreational gambler and luxury traveler. It's a crossover site, and it talks a lot about Las Vegas, Atlantic City, luxury hotels, and also gambling and luxury lifestyle. So it's sort of a mixture of things. Whereas a lot of people sometimes talk about just luxury hotels, I'm much more into what I would call the casino experience.
Sure. No, and it's a great website. There's great articles on there, helpful articles. There's some podcasts on there as well. So you made your trip to Atlantic City last week. What brought you down there? What made you decide to go after all this time?
Well, I actually was planning to go a few months ago, and that didn't work out because I just relocated to a new city, and MGM has come up with this new air charter service, and I'm down in Charlotte now, and I was able to hop on one of the new MGM air charters from Charlotte to Atlantic City Airport, and it's a new program that MGM has, and they're trying to bring more people into mostly Atlantic City and Biloxi with these charter services. And they're doing like flights from Houston to Atlantic City Airport, Charlotte to Atlantic City Airport, Macon, Georgia to Atlantic City Airport. So I think it's a pretty cool program.
For free? Do people get to go for free?
If you are a rated player, you can go for free. So they do it two ways. It's either it goes from comp to they sell weekends for like $5.99 to $8.99 per person. That include the hotel, airfare, and also transportation from Atlantic City Airport. So they sell it, they discount it, and they also do it for comp if you're rated that way under the M Life program.
Well, that's pretty neat. How did you like Atlantic City? What were your impressions after not having been there for a little while?
I think I chose the right time to come back. I mean, Borgata seems very, very normal to me, and I really liked it. I mean, some of the big things like the M4 VIP lounge has reopened. That's the lounge that's in the basement area that used to be the poker room. You know, the craps tables are full. There's a lot of vibe on the casino floor. I didn't realize at first, but I guess I sort of knew, but I spent a lot of time in Las Vegas that masks are optional if you're vaccinated in New Jersey, whereas in Las Vegas, you have to still wear masks. The mask mandate came back in August. So it was just great to be back. And I love table games and I love gaming in New Jersey in general. I'm originally from New Jersey, so it felt very normal, and that was a wonderful thing.
Now, rumor has it that you figured out a way to beat the system. Namely, you found a way to drink at the B Bar, which is a great bar to hang out at. You found a way to drink at the B Bar virtually for free. What happened?
Well, basically, the B Bar has and a few people know there's some of the best video poker bar tops in the country. And on selective machines, they have a version of video poker called 9-6 jacks or better. And if you learn the strategy, just like you would learn any other strategy, like basic strategy at blackjack, but if you learn video poker strategy and you learn it pretty well, the game is a 99.54% game. But the trick is, as long as you're playing video poker at the bar top, the drinks are flowing. And the beautiful thing in New Jersey, they're not using drink coupons. So basically, you can get a drink as often as the bartender wants to give you a drink. And I was showing our mutual friend, Ed from the 33 pool is how you refer to him, how to hustle these cocktails. So basically, you're playing a really, really good video poker game with a very low house edge and very low variance and getting free drinks. Now, doesn't mean you're necessarily going to win because there's that thing called variance, but it's as good as it gets.
Now, explain that 99.54% situation that you mentioned. What does that mean? It doesn't mean you're going to win 99% of the time, does it?
Well, the problem is whenever you look at math for any gambling game, it's being looked at in the long term if you played a lot of hands. So say you did sit there and play 50,000 hands of video poker or 100,000 hands of video poker, that would approach the 99.54%. So for every $100 that you gamble, you would only lose 50 cents. But that's in the long term of play. You don't come close to that long term play when you're sitting there and playing video poker. The other thing that's important to realize, that percentage also takes into account that you're going to hit a royal flush, because that's part of the math. And a royal flush only happens once every 42,000 hands.
So does that only apply, that 99.54% situation, to jacks or better video poker? Or does it apply to also the other types of video poker that they offer, deuces wild or whatever else they might offer?
No, it has to. So the beautiful thing about video poker, as opposed to slot machines, and this is so important to remember, with video poker, they're showing you the pay tables so you can know if it's a really good game or an okay game. Whereas slot machines, they don't reveal what the pay tables are or what the house edge is. Now, not all 9-6 jacks or better is a version of jacks or better. That's great. They also have some other super bonus game, which is similar to that. But here's the thing about it with video poker and bar tops. You don't have to get yourself too crazy. even if you don't play one of the best games, maybe you're playing a game with a 2% house edge or a 3% house edge, as long as the denomination is small enough. And that's the thing that's very special at B-Bar. At B-Bar, they have this 9-6 jacks or better at 25 cent denomination. And they have other games too, which are not as good as 9-6 jacks or better, but they're still at the 25 cent denomination. So even if you were giving up 2 or 3 percentage points, and let's face it, if you don't play perfect video poker, you're giving up some percentage point. It's still a pretty good play because those, you know, lemon drop martinis and sidecars are like $12, right? No. So you don't need to be, you don't need to be perfect.
That's a great strategy. So people are not going to lose a lot of money, and they're going to be able to get $12 drinks for free if you go to the B bar, play for a quarter video poker, and it's not a bad way to go. Talk with Michael Traeger. You can read some of his work at travelzork.com. That's travelzork.com. So you stayed at the Borgata as well. I'm a little disappointed that the water club is still not reopened at the Borgata, but what was your experience like from a hotel perspective staying there?
The hotel was great. There's only really one criticism I have, and this is a little bit of a minor criticism. So everything's back, including room service. I was in a suite, which is their lowest category suite, which is a Fiore suite, which has great views. And it was just renovated. If I'm correct, I'm pretty sure those were just renovated right before COVID. The only thing I didn't like is room service was actually the fastest that I've ever seen before. And the food was really good, but they're using all of these crazy single-use containers, which drives me crazy. So your English muffins in a container, your bag of bacon's in a container, boy, your omelets in a container, and it's delivered in a bag. Whereas it used to be pushed up in a really nice cart, and you'd have all the nice plates and all of that. So that drives annoying. Me. It annoys me because after you eat breakfast, you basically are going to fill a landfill of single-use containers.
Yeah, it's incredibly wasteful. How did you like the new lobby bar at Borgata? I'm really liking that.
I managed to take a couple pictures of it, but I didn't wind up spending much time there. I always go into Atlantic City with a little bit of a strategy that I think I'm not going to gamble that much. But then I got so sucked into dice on this trip that I spent many more hours at dice than I expected. And things were, once again, very normal. And I also spent a lot of time, because I know some of the servers there, and they are phenomenal people, is the M4 VIP Lounge. Mm. And that is an amazing value. If you're M Life Gold or above, they use $12.50 in comps, but that $12.50 gets you a really nice buffet with great shrimp and oysters and mussels and roast, but also some of the best cocktails at Borgata.
I love the M4 Lounge precisely for that reason. It's not just an open bar with well drinks, as you'll get when you're playing. It is a top shelf open bar. You can get an $18 martini, top shelf alcohol, and it's all complimentary included in that. The reason that I don't end up going to the M4 Lounge that often is because I'll find myself often rolling with a crew of 3, 4, 5 people, and you can only take one person there at a time.
Yeah. I mean, technically, they sometimes will approve you to take more people. It can be approved by a host, but it's very discretionary. But I've gotten approved before for 2 people to go. You need to be able to speak to a host, and they can put it in the computer. So, you know, another thing. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, another great place. I was hanging out with, I think you know, Joe of the Everything Atlantic City Facebook group.
Absolutely. He's been a guest on the show. He's great.
I've seen everyone this weekend. I showed him the best, like, secret place to smoke cigars.
That's exactly what I'm interested in. Because the last time I was at the Borgata, I was annoyed that they wouldn't let me smoke a cigar at the B-Bar.
I know. That's been a big change. There's no smoking at the B-Bar, and I think there's no smoking at the lobby bar, and there's no smoking at the MGM Sportsbook bar, which doesn't leave a lot of places. I don't really personally like to enjoy a cigar at the craps table. I think there's too much going on. I think it's slightly pretentious when you're blowing that much smoke, sure, you know, at the craps table. But there is a small lounge area, in lounge in quotations, in the back of the high limit tables room, where, you know, in the back of the high limit tables room, there's a little lounge area before the bathrooms, and then the credit department's on the other side. And they have ashtrays there. and they have a sofa and two chairs. And what I do is I grab a drink from B Bar. We take a really nice drink and we go over and we sit in that lounge area and enjoy a cigar. And there's barely anyone ever sitting there, especially earlier in the day.
I'm trying to picture it. So is it over in the direction of where the sports book and the food court would be?
No. This is the high limit table games area where they have baccarat and blackjack and single zero roulette.
Hmm. Yeah, I passed it 100 times. I can't picture a tiny lounge area there. I'll have to when I'm there on Friday, I'm going to have to take a closer look.
You know what? Go in through the credit department and it'll lead you right into that lounge area. And that's another interesting change that I noticed at Borgata. For the first time ever, it looks like the credit department is not open 24 hours a day, which I found to be very interesting because that was always one of the cornerstones of Borgata, is they had a 24-hour credit department, which is really, really good business when you run a casino, because if you're a big player with a credit line and it's 3:30 in the morning and you need what we call a TTO, this trip only, because you want an increase in your credit line, which might not be so great for you personally, but is decent for the casino, they had credit people working 24 hours, but it looks like they no longer have credit people working 24 hours.
How did you do with dice, by the way?
Nothing better than holding my own. I could not pick up a really good session. Every session was a couple of hours, and every session I had a loss, not a really significant loss for the amount that I was betting and the amount of time I was playing, but I could not pick up a win. It was very frustrating. And the most frustrating thing is I try to stay away from the all tall small bet, which is a proposition bet in the center, unless I'm shooting. I don't usually go on it, or if sometimes I do it. And believe it or not, I finally did get on a good roll and I rolled the complete all tall small.
Oh,
and
but you were
nobody. And no, I wasn't on it, and nobody on the table was on it.
That's the worst. That is the worst. We're talking with Michael Traeger. He's with TravelZork.com. I saw that you and our friend Ed O'Connor from the 33 pool reported they took away a few craps tables over at the Borgata. What happened? What's in their place?
What's in their place is that fancy stadium gaming where they have those terminals. And they have a couple of dealers who are like running, different games, though the craps is an automated bubbly kind of one. And they also have the stadium, the stadium blackjack, where you're basically sitting at a terminal and playing. But the really bizarre news about it is that the blackjack, because Ed found this out, I didn't even look closely at it. The blackjack's all paying 6 to 5, which I thought is so unusual. Because most of the blackjack is actually pretty good.
Right, 3-2. Borgata. 3-2.
Exactly. So I don't know if they're doing that because the stadium gaming is aimed at this new, younger audience that doesn't know any better, or because it's a lower denomination. But I would say it's never a good sign when you see more 6-5 blackjack, because you really don't see much of it at Borgata. So that's disappointing. Mm. It's also disappointing that we're losing a bunch of regular craps tables. Yeah. So now the craps tables are full. But I will tell you, a good thing is the craps tables for most of the weekend, they usually had at least one table that was a $10 table. And that is pretty awesome.
I think a lot of the changes at Borgata have been for the worse since MGM took it over. They no longer offer 5x odds on the craps numbers. The comps are far less generous. There's a number of other instances that I don't feel benefit the player. Anything positive happening on the MGM front if people are Borgata players? Anything that we can give them to be optimistic about?
Well, being the forever optimist and everything that you describe is accurate about MGM, except, you and me call it devaluation. MGM would call it they're aligning it nationally with their other properties.
Yeah. They're screwing players around the country, not just in New Jersey.
Yes, exactly. So what's very, very interesting is that Blackstone announced the sale of Cosmopolitan Las Vegas this week. And it looks like the Cosmopolitan has been sold to our friends at MGM, and then MGM Resorts will be operating the casino, because we know these casinos, just because the person who operates the casino doesn't always own the land. You know how complicated these real estate investment trust things are with these casinos, but it looks like Cosmopolitan, for all intents and purposes, will be operated by MGM Resorts, and Cosmopolitan will become an M Life casino. So that's interesting.
So you can earn a couple of free nights at the Cosmopolitan if you're playing at the Borgata, and you can earn, and vice versa if people happen to be out in Vegas. All right, less than a minute left, and I want to ask you about Zorkfest. But did you check out any other casinos while you were in Atlantic City? Any thumbs up or thumbs down based on your recent trip?
Yeah, lots of thumbs up at Hard Rock. Hard Rock on a Saturday night, that place has amazing vibe and amazing buzz. Went to Council Oaks, dinner was fabulous, and I've got to believe, and I've been hearing this from a lot of people, that they are giving Borgata a run for their money. You know, I think Borgata really has some competition with Hard Rock. And I was pretty impressed. I mean, the place looks great.
It certainly does. December 17th and 18th, you're doing Zorkfest in Las Vegas. You teach folks tell folks, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What is Zorkfest? How can people sign up for this if they want to go?
Sure. We teach you about travel and casino loyalty. You know, part of that is how to use your frequent flyer miles and your hotel points, but a big part of it is the crossover with casino stuff. So we even have sessions where we'll talk about, like, poker players, how to increase your edge through casino promotions. We'll also be looking at all those apps and how to maximize awards and how to leverage your online casinos to rack up credit card awards. We'll talk about the credit card programs and getting those points and how you could do a sign-up bonus and get points, and you could use those points to stay in Las Vegas or to fly first class. So we sort of bring all of that together. A lot of people hear a lot about, you know, travel loyalty stuff all the time and the miles and points. We do all of that, plus we integrate the casino stuff. We've got guys like Anthony Curtis from Las Vegas Advisor there, Gilbert from God Save the Points, Dave Grossman from Miles Talk. We've got a super vlogger, Matt Bridger, who's actually from the UK, one of the first Vegas vloggers. We're going to do slot polls, all kinds of stuff. And Tim from the Better Life podcast is helping us coordinate this live audience podcaster event called Podcaster Potluck. And you can find out about any of that at Zorkfest.com.
Zorkfest.com. Michael Traeger, check him out at TravelZork.com. Thank you very much for the time. I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks, and thanks for having me on again.
800-848-WABC if you want to comment. Straight ahead.
You're hearing things.
You're hearing things.
On 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Stay for just a while. Stay and let me look at you. It's been so long I hardly knew you. Standing in the door. Stay with me a while. I only want to talk to you. We traveled halfway around the world to find ourselves again.
Neil Diamond, the great Neil Diamond, singing September Morn. This will be the last September Morn for just about a year, for the next 11 months. Tomorrow is the beginning of October. I had a good September, I will say. September's always a big month for me, right? And celebrating the anniversary of this radio show, celebrating the anniversary of my marriage. So I'm sorry to see September go, but hopefully October is just as rewarding. 800-848-WABC. Carol is in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hey there, Greg. I was actually calling to speak about the Rudy Giuliani interview, but I think you may be having a problem with your throat because you speak for 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, and that might be an issue, that you speak a lot on the phone.
Well, I don't think so, Carol, and I appreciate the call. Thank you. Because I don't feel any strain in my voice. I've gotten laryngitis from speaking before. I once hosted a television show for 33 straight hours. I couldn't speak for 2 to 3 days after that. And that's happened to me in other times where your voice gets strained from use. There's a different feeling from overuse versus just having a tickle that that's a result of a post-nasal drip. And I can tell the difference. Maybe I'm not expressing it well. But when you speak for as long as I do, you know the difference. You know if your throat is hurting or your throat is strained because of overuse versus you get a tickle in your throat because there's a post-nasal drip. Hey, next hour, we'll talk baseball. We're heading into the playoffs. Until then, your influence counts, so use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
And this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano, a lifelong Met fan, long-suffering Met fan. And really, this season in particular has been a real shame because, I don't know if there's been another team in the history of baseball that was in first place for as long as the Metropolitans have been this season and then it ends up finishing the season with a losing record. It's simply astounding, the level of collapse that we've seen. But that comes, it's part and parcel of being a Met fan. If you're a Met fan, it comes with heartbreak. You kind of expect that going in. So I'm going to the Met game tonight. I'm looking forward to going, even though the game is sort of meaningless and because the Mets are playing far from stellar these days. But I'm going with two of my siblings and seven of my siblings-in-law. So that will be the largest collection of my siblings and siblings-in-law in one place since my wife and I got married 2 years ago. So I'll be at the game today. But interesting thing has gone on in baseball. Young people are less interested than ever in baseball as a fan, putting aside playing it, which I think is also true, but they're less interested than ever in being a fan of baseball and less interested in going to the games. And, you know, I have to be honest, I'm less interested in going to anything. I mean, it's not just baseball. It's wrestling matches. It's movies. Maybe it's just the graduation of me being a full-grown curmudgeon in that I don't like to go to anything anymore, or maybe it's something else. But Steve Cohen, the new owner of the Mets, is trying to come up with a way to market this team that makes people, especially young people, still want to go. So he and his wife, Steve Cohen and his wife, have prescribed a marketing overhaul that will include an update to the team's brand design, including customized fonts in marketing materials like photography, signage, and ads, as well as, you ready for this? New experiences and features at its stadium meant to give the Mets more cultural credibility. You know, I'll be honest, if I was making a list of the top 100 problems with the Mets, cultural credibility would not be in my top 100. But that's why I'm not running a baseball team, and that's why I am not exactly a master of marketing. I'd have more than 4,400 Facebook followers if I did. You could follow me on Facebook, by the way, at facebook.com/MoranoFan as we try and continue on our road to 5,000. So visit the Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. Click like or follow, whatever you click now. So the new owners of the Mets are facing some difficulties that go beyond player strikeouts at baseball and other sports are struggling to attract young people. It's a group that has grown increasingly apathetic to live games. Jeff DeLine, the team's chief revenue officer, quoted in the Wall Street Journal as saying, "All sports are being challenged with how you attract young fans. How do we get them engaged again? Their consumer habits are completely different." So marketing and talent management firm Range Media Partners is leading the new Mets effort. So this initiative is in development, but let me tell you some of the ideas that they're bandying about. This is not a joke. This is actually what they're doing. Offering live comedy throughout the games. Updating existing spaces in the stadium where people can gather. Adding more screens throughout the baseball park. Making other technology upgrades. So it is really interesting. So the question I would ask you is, what do you think of these proposed upgrades to the fan experience? Offering live comedy, adding more screens and so forth. And number two is, what would you do if you were tasked with marketing the New York Mets or any baseball team to get young people, a group that increasingly does not want to go to live sporting events? What would you do to get them back to these live sporting events? That's the question.
A question. Since before your sun burned hot in space and before your race was born, I have awaited a question.
800-848-WABC with your answer. So the goal is to raise the Mets brand on social media, in film, in music, as well as to more closely associate the Mets with their hometown, a city that is globally known as the cultural capital of the world. So the team's also enlisting sponsors, according to this article in the Wall Street Journal, to help create new experiences for fans. So it worked with sponsor Airbnb, for example, to turn an unused office space at Citi Field into a one-night stay in July, hosted by former Mets player Bobby Bonilla. Now that's fun. I would have loved to have done something like that. Other plans include a podcast targeting Hispanic audiences and collaborations in the fashion industry. So Major League Baseball's challenge right now is to find the next generation of fans. Their audience is skewing older than any other professional sport, according to the executive vice president at Horizon Media, David Campbell. The NBA's audience is the youngest, followed by the National Football League, followed by college football, followed by basketball, and the NHL, and baseball is dead last. They are the oldest and whitest demographic in all of sports. Mr. DeLine, who I mentioned earlier, who works with the Mets, I don't think you'll see many kids sit down and watch a baseball game from start to finish. They will watch the highlights on TikTok, and the statistics bear that out. I know some people don't like statistics. The median age for Major League Baseball's TV viewing audience is 59.7 years old for the regular season as of this last month. That's up from 56.9 for the regular season 4 years ago. So in just 4 years, the age of the average baseball fan has gone up almost 3 years. 9% more households are watching baseball this season compared with last year. Obviously, last year was a little weird because the season was shortened by the pandemic. And MLB.TV streaming audience has skewed younger in recent years, according to the league. But national baseball household viewership on broadcast and cable TV also declined. So this change comes as a lot of people are turning away from traditional TV viewing and towards social media. So I'd love to know what you would do to get young people watching baseball again and what you would do to get them back at baseball stadiums again. Now, radio's audience, talk radio especially, our audience skews a little bit older. So maybe it's a little counterintuitive for me to ask an audience which is skewing older how to attract young people. But if there's one thing that I've learned about about older folks, they always know better than the current generation of young people because they're always in a position to say, back in my day, and they always seem to have the right answer. So hopefully you will as well. How do you get kids back into baseball? Is live comedy the answer? Is a Hispanic podcast the answer? Is more screens the answer? 800-848-WABC, 800-848-9222. James is on in Ontario, Canada. Hello, James.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can, James. What's on your mind?
Oh, sorry, just give me a second. Sorry, sir. Just give me a second.
James, didn't you do this to me before? Didn't you call me and then have me wait for you before?
No, 2 seconds. I'm sorry, sir. I've been having problems. Give me a second. 1 second, please. Oh, that's not it. I was ready for you. Did you hang up on me already?
James, I'll probably live to regret it, but no, I haven't hung up on you yet.
Okay, I'll give you 2 seconds. Okay, put on speaker. Okay, then, okay.
James, this is painful, James. This is absolutely painful.
Oh, is that better?
Yes, it's a delight. James, go ahead. What's on your mind? We're all riveted. We're all waiting to be enlightened by whatever your comments are.
I'm sorry, Frank. I'm in a garage, and it's a crummy signal, and I got a cheap cell phone. I apologize.
That's all right, James. Anyway, let us have it. Go ahead.
So back to the original topic, I had a few comments to make about the originally talking about crack. And I don't know, how many Canadian callers do you get? I like the States. You guys are our brothers. But I'm from Ontario. And anyway. Well, I guess that doesn't matter. So I get to the point.
Why start now, James?
About crack and cocaine. I've been to rehab. I talked to your screener. And I'm not a hardcore. Never had a blessed not to have a hardcore problem with hiding hardcore drugs. But I've met people from all walks of life. And when you guys were talking about crack and cocaine, and I believe that cocaine is like much higher quality and more expensive. And crack is like diluted by extra chemicals added.
James, I'm sorry, your phone is all screwed up. And again, I feel like I need to go on drugs after listening to that phone call. 800-848-WABC. Here's the very sober-minded Steve from Manhattan. Hello, Steve.
That phone was not airworthy. Baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Frank Morano. Now, first of all, gimmicks ain't going to work because nothing's going to substitute for a 500-foot Babe Ruth home run. But I have some ideas what they could do. First of all, a lot of the Latin kids, they sign them at 16 years old. They should sign the American kids at 16 years old and let them get – that'll create some interest. Also, this might sound funny, but just get the kids in the ballpark. If you catch a foul ball, it's an out. So these kids would go crazy. Think about a World Series.
You know, they're actually doing that in some independent league teams around the country.
They are doing. That was my idea from years ago. So they're stealing it. But also,
hopefully they'll pay you a royalty.
Right. And I'd like to say something about the crime, too, in a second. But the Little League through high school, these kids today, they'll get bored in a second. And don't press them on who Mickey Mantle is because they'll snap on their phone and they'll tell you if you press them. Little League through high school, have open substitution. Don't let the kids sit and rot on the bench. The other basketball, hockey, all these football, you can substitute players. Do it in baseball, too, because a lot of these kids don't want to be sitting on the bench. You got to remember, too, Major League Baseball, they have the best pension and health care for their players when they retire. You play one game in the major leagues and you're guaranteed health care for life. I think it's like 25 games, and you got a major league pension whenever you want to take it.
Right, but Steve, I'm not sure what the pension and health benefits of a player has to do.
I'm just showing you, but how healthy this league really is. It does bring in a lot of money, but don't forget they play 162 games. I mean, they're all caught up with cable TV and all the different TV rights and everything. They don't get the ratings that some other sports do, but let's face it, they have less games. Football is only once a week. And can I just bring up something about the crime issue, Frank?
Please, Steve, be my guest.
Okay. All right, listen, first of all, most crimes in this country are settled on the state level in their criminal courts. 50 states, 50 different laws. Obviously, New York has liberal laws and everything. I did not agree with Trump when he released those 4,000 prisoners out of the federal pen. I know Tom Cotton was against it. And of course, the Democrats are on board. The left wing always wants to open up the prison and let people come flying out of there. And drugs in this country, I don't care what they want to do. If they want to make it race baiting with it and stuff, drugs rip the heart and soul out of this country. It destroyed neighborhoods.
All right. So, Steve, let's say you're right. Right. So why should a mandatory minimum for possession of crack be so much 18 times more than it is for powdered cocaine?
But you got to remember, like I just said, 50 different states. The criminal laws are different in each state.
No, but that's a federal law. That's a federal law.
Federal law, but like I said, most of these crimes, most of the people who get caught with drugs are in criminal court in the state that they're caught in. It's not a federal crime unless you're bringing in massive amounts of drugs, or if you're crossing state line, you're bringing the FBI in. That's not brought into it, but that should be brought into it because the
right. Well, your point again. I don't want to revisit last hour's topic, but again, your point is actually meritorious, that a lot of the people locked up right now are locked up in state penitentiaries, not in federal penitentiaries. I happen to think what President Trump did with the First Step Act was a great thing, and I do hope the Senate comes around with this Equal Sentencing Act. 800-848-WABC. Michael is in Brooklyn. Michael, how do you get kids to watch baseball again?
Well, Frankie, good morning to you, and I just love your show. You know, you're really like a smooth cup of coffee early morning.
Well, you're awfully nice. Thank you, Michael.
No, it's true.
It's nice hearing you after those two, the last two callers. I wasn't sure if everyone else was getting as frustrated with those two as I was, but
yeah, and I got to commend you also. I'll try to be brief. You handle everybody very well, even if they frustrate you or get you, you know, whatever.
Well, thank you, Michael. Again, no need to be brief if you're going to be complimentary. Take as long as you like.
No, it's true. Well, I got to tell you, Frank, just on a personal side, all the Franks that have ever been in my life have been the greatest. You know, all the Franks that I've ever known. And commending the name Frank. But getting to the baseball, look at the culture of the society we live in today. Most young people are, you know, playing with the cell phone and the games and this and that. It's been like an indoor culture. You know, it's not an outdoor culture. It's, you know, like if you go back to the 60s, the 50s, the 70s, I mean, a lot of people were out there. Young folks were out there, you know, wanted to look forward to going.
Well, no, I agree with you, and it's not a matter of agreement. The facts bear out what you're saying, but the other sports have younger fans than what baseball has. So should baseball just throw in the towel? If not, what is the solution? Is it the Steve Cohen approach of including comedians at games and more screens? Or is it something else? Is there any way to get young people to watch baseball again?
I don't know. You know, an idea that came to my mind, and I don't know if it's a good idea, but maybe create a halftime with the music, you know, with somebody on stage, you know.
I think that is an idea. You know, that's something that they do to some extent in the minor league teams. Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them adopt an idea like that. Michael, thanks for the call and thanks for your nice words. 800-848-WABC. Ralph in Queens, how do you get kids to watch baseball again?
Well, first of all, a young couple with three kids can't even hardly afford to take their kids to the game. They're paying these players astronomical amounts of money. I just think maybe they lower the prices, something like that. I don't know. It's just unbelievable. The price of tickets, the parking. It's just, how do the young couple afford?
Well, that's true. That is true. When I was a kid, the cheapest seat at a ball game was $6. Now, you know, getting on the subway to get to the ballpark is $6. You know,
right?
That's a fair point, Ralph. So you think it's mostly a function of pricing?
I think so. I mean, my kids are adults now with their own children. It's like unbelievable to take their kids to the game.
But why would that not affect the NBA, the NFL, and the other sports that have even higher prices than baseball?
Yeah, this is true, too. You got me there.
All right, Ralph. Well, I appreciate the food for thought. Mike in Staten Island, enlighten us.
Well, Ralph kind of stole my thunder. I was going to go with the whole price thing because I can go to three hockey games for the price of one Yankee game.
Well, I mean, it depends on where you sit, right? I mean, if you go to, if you get a seat in Madison Square Garden to see the Rangers, is it really a third less expensive than a comparable seat at Yankee Stadium?
Well, it's just more convenient to go to the Garden. It's in the city. It's not all the way up in the Bronx. To go to the Bronx, I got to park. I got to drive. I got to park. That's gas. That's tolls. To go to the Garden, I hop on the Staten Island Ferry. I'm a quick train ride. I'm there. Maybe you got to lose a battle to win a battle. Maybe let the kids in for free. Or maybe kids eat free.
Well, that's interesting. A loss leader let the kids into the game for free or let them eat for free. That's not a bad idea, Mike. I'm actually going to write that one down. That's pretty good. What would you do to get young people into baseball again? Baseball has the oldest audience of any sport. And that's not something that can continue. 800-848-WABC. Les is in Charlotte. Hello, Les.
Mr. Morano, I've been watching baseball since the 1960s, and the best way to get people into the stadium is you have to win. And I know that's easier said than done, but that's what you have to do.
But this is a national problem, though, Les. This is affecting winning teams as well as losing teams. You're seeing the audience skew older across the board.
That's true. But you have to win. Everybody loves a winner. If you don't win, then you don't have the same interest. If you win, then your interest goes up. You get more people out in the stadium.
All right, Les. Well, I mean, the thing about baseball is there's always going to be a winning team, right? In any game, somebody always wins. So somebody always wins. 800-848-WABC. Gordon is calling from Canada. Gordon, you have to redeem your country's reputation because of the last Canadian caller.
Well, you should ask him where he's from in Ontario. It's a pretty big place. But anyway, I think, behind my where I live, they play baseball there. Like, I was watching university baseball the other day, and there's no children watching. You're right about that. And I think it's because they don't play enough softball when they're young. Like, you hardly ever see children play anything anymore, like on the street, like street hockey. And I hear in New York, or I've seen that they play stickball. I don't know if children do that anymore. They're too connected.
Well, Gordon, I don't disagree, as other callers have said, right? There's you're seeing children interact with one another digitally rather than in person, which has its own separate series of problems. But with that in mind, let's say they put you in charge of marketing for the Major League Baseball team. And Gordon, your job is to get the audience younger. How do you do that? How do you take the sport that has the oldest audience in all of baseball and make it something that appeals to younger folks?
I think you should insult them for staying in their parents' basement playing video games.
So insult them. That'll get them to the ball games more.
Well, tell them to get out there and know the rules of baseball and how much fun it is.
Gordon, given the Mets' history of poor management decisions, with an idea like that, you may soon find yourself as general manager of the Mets. Juan is in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Juan.
Hey, Frank. How you doing? Good morning. Great show.
Good morning. Thank you.
The previous caller stole my thunder a little bit. There's no way these kids will put down their gaming consoles. And,
right, I get it, Juan. So let's say that's true. How do you then get them to watch baseball?
It's difficult. I cannot even begin to come up with a plan. It's how ridiculous it is with these electronic devices, Frank.
Well, fair enough, Juan. Thank you. So there you go. We don't have a lot of solutions there, but we did have a lot of folks that wanted to talk to me. So there you have it. I'm happy to play that role. Hey, by the way, piggybacking not only on this subject, but a subject that we went into with Rudy Giuliani and yesterday, there is a fascinating article in the New York Times Magazine. Why is every young person in America watching The Sopranos? The show's new audience is also seeing something different in it, a parable about a country in terminal decline. It's a fascinating piece, and I'm going to share it on my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. I've also shared a link to Sunday's National Psoriasis Foundation walk. If you're interested in walking with me or making a small contribution, I would really appreciate you doing so. So just go to facebook.com/MoranoFan, and you can make your contribution online there. It's the last article that I – it's the last item that I just posted on there. All right. We're going to play the – well, let me take one more call here. Then we'll play the $1,000 Minute, give you a chance to win $1,000 by answering 10 questions in 60 seconds. You get one wrong, you lose. But let me say hello to Mike in downtown Manhattan. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Mike.
Good, good. You sound great. It's always good to hear the show.
Thanks.
So anyway, my opinion is that baseball begins at home, sir. My father put a baseball and a glove in my hand when I was very young, and we used to walk to Yankee Stadium, and we didn't have iPads or any of that junk to distract us, to keep us in the house. So I say you take the iPads away, you put a mitt and a ball in their hand, and you kick them out of the house and tell them to go find something to do.
Well, look, I think that would work well in the I always get confused which is the micro and which is the macro, but I think that would work well in the micro, and the individual parents could do that, and it's a good strategy for all sports. But, and thanks for the call, Mike, I don't think it works as a solution, right? If you're marketing for a baseball team or for Major League Baseball in general, you're not going to change the whole culture of how children interact with one another and how they consume media. So it seems like a lot of the suggestions that I've heard are, well, tell kids to put their phone down. Now, I agree with you. They should put their phone down. A lot of adults should put their phone down. But I think we have to recognize reality as it is, which is that children are on their phones from the time they're old enough to read, even before they're old enough to read, and that's a trend that continues for years. Given that that's the case, if you're tasked with making baseball younger, which is going to have to be, otherwise all the fans will die out, how do you then make baseball appealing to them? Maybe if you read this New York Times Magazine article, maybe there's something that they can learn from why all the young people in this country are watching The Sopranos. Maybe there is. Maybe there isn't. I don't know. We'll continue with your calls in just a minute. If you want to play the $1,000 Minute and try and answer 10 questions in 60 seconds, you can call right now to 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. And if you're the seventh caller to 1-800-848-9222, you'll have a chance, if you haven't played before, to be the today's contestant in the $1,000 Minute. We'll continue straight ahead. Autumn leaves. Roger Williams. Autumn is here, folks. We are seeing some leaves change. You find yourself a tree today, and these leaves will change color right before your very eyes. It's just an astounding thing to watch. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's really remarkable to see. All right, time for us to give one lucky listener an opportunity to win $1,000 by answering 10 questions in 60 seconds.
The Other Side of Midnight presents...
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
All right, let's meet today's contestant, Anthony, in Edison, New Jersey. Hello there, Anthony.
Yes, good morning, Frank.
Hey, so you're up to date on, you're familiar with how the rules of this game work, Anthony?
Yes.
So just very simply, 10 questions in 60 seconds. If you get one wrong, contest is over. And if you run out of time, then contest is over. But if you win, then you're all good. You're $1,000 richer. Now, if you answer questions correctly, I'm just going to move on to the next question so that we can make sure we get as many of these questions in under the buzzer as possible. All right.
Right.
Ready to go?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. How many terms can a U.S. president be elected to?
Two.
What day of the week does Cousin Brucey air on WABC?
Saturday night.
Who is the Democratic nominee for mayor of New York City?
Eric Adams.
What city does Batman live in?
Gotham.
What baseball player has hit the most home runs?
Barry Bonds.
What borough do I live in?
You live in Long Island, which would be Suffolk.
You were doing really well. I am a proud Staten Islander, Anthony. You were doing well, not only in terms of accuracy, but you were doing at a great pace. And had you gotten a few more right answers, you would be $1,000 richer. But we're going to try and give you a baseball cap anyway. Talk to Molly. Stay on hold. Give her your address. And you will hopefully eventually get a baseball cap. They're sold out right now, but we're ordering more, I think. And hopefully we can get you in the queue. He's doing well there. 800-848-9222. If you want to comment on anything else, you want to check out some other WABC merchandise, you can go to WABCRadioStore.com. Meantime, let me say hello to my partner at 5 a.m., Juliette Huddy, who has come into the studio fresh off celebrating her birthday. How are you?
Good day. I'm good. How are you?
Do you want to go to breakfast for the post-birthday celebration today? Or do you want to just, not do that?
I would, but I actually have a Pilates class later this morning that I have to make. Otherwise, I lose $10.
I
didn't realize because I'd been canceling some classes here and there and rescheduling.
All right. Well, maybe we'll do it Friday.
Friday could work. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm not sensing a great deal of enthusiasm. Maybe we'll just not do it. Okay.
Well, it's not. It has nothing to do with you. It's just my mom is in town.
Oh,
right
all
now.
Right.
I'm going to get her.
That's
this morning.
That's fair.
I have a lot of chaos in my house.
People in town as well. Hey, did you happen?
Do you?
I do. Did you happen to notice Molly's outfit?
I did not, but I do like the, what is that, a leopard print?
So, leopard print.
Very, very nice, Molster.
So I noticed Molly's outfit, when I walked in. She's all, dressed nicely. She's got boots and so forth.
Ooh.
And first thing she says to me is, oh, well, I know Juliette's going to be here today because you weren't here yesterday. I want to really put on my best foot forward for Juliette. I want to put the best
outfit.
Stop
it.
Yeah, no, I
can attest. She told me this.
What did she say? She
said,
you have the best fashion sense of anyone she knows.
That's amazing.
Right?
Yeah, I love your style, Juliette. So I was like, I'm going to put on a Juliette-inspired outfit today.
I love it. You look adorable. We're going to have to take a picture, Ma.
Of course.
Oh,
but I mean, you look nice. You always look nice. But you're wearing a jogging outfit,
well,
right?
Well, I'm wearing my Pilates outfit.
Oh, okay. I mean, so I don't get why. I mean, you look like a normal person. Mm-hmm. Where is this keen fashion sense that Molly is so eager to impress?
Because usually when I come in here, I try to dress up because I want to look presentable.
Right.
And I don't really dress up any other time because we don't really do anything anymore. We like to stay home,
hang out
at our kitchen island. So
I get that.
I mainly see the if you aren't already a fan of Jet Set Juliet, you can check out Jet Set Juliet on Twitter, and we post all the audiograms so you can hear clips and you can click through to hear the whole
segment. And you can see her nice outfit.
And you can see her nice outfit.
Wow, they are very becoming.
You guys are so sweet.
Can anybody see your outfits anywhere? Do you want to put it on the other side of Midnight Instagram?
We'll get there one day.
No, okay. Oh, fair enough.
Thank you, Molly. Yes. You look adorable.
Given some
I like the little collar and everything. Very, very nice.
So you're not going to put this up on Aaron's?
No, we're going to take a picture.
Or do you not
together.
Want the crazies that listen to me following you and stalking you?
I've been nervous to do a face reveal.
That's that's good. That's probably wise. The last
you're
thing we
cutie
want
pie.
But some of the people that listen at 4 o'clock in the morning, they're not necessarily the kind of people that Molly wants knowing what she's wearing and what she looks like.
I'm such a cutie pie
that
it's too hard to handle sometimes.
Yeah, you are. Was that like sexist or something was that like a
no, Juliet,
I call everybody cutie.
We're
sisters.
We're there. You and me are there.
You're my girl.
There you
I
go.
Love working here.
But
I love you guys.
Same here. So do I.
I really do.
All right. Hey, speaking of being here, this is WABC, and it's time for the WABC clip of the day. Today's WABC clip of the day is from the Bernie and Sid program, which is coming up at 6 a.m.
This is massive. This is huge. This is deep state. Our national security team, totally incompetent. And again, lying. They won't tell us, obfuscating. They won't answer a simple yes or no question. I mean,
he did eventually. I mean, even when he was pressed into, you know, did Biden tell you to do this or not? He did answer it. He dances around it, McKenzie, right. But then he does answer it.
McKenzie, Milian, Austin, all three of these, three stooges. It's not a joke, though. This is life and death lies that they're trying to cover up for or whatever they're doing. Stop these stupid blanking political games. Just answer some straight up questions, all right?
There you go. You can bet yesterday that General Milley blamed the chaos of the Afghanistan evacuation on the State Department and not the military. You can bet that Bernie is going to have quite a bit to say on that front. Does not seem at all impressed with the job that General Milley is doing as chairman of the Joint Chiefs. So check out the Bernie and Sid show starting at 6 a.m. Again, I will be participating in the National Psoriasis Foundation walk on Sunday in the Bronx. If you want to walk with me, we'll have a good time. You can go to facebook.com/MoranoFan. You can make a contribution or you could sign up to walk, whatever you want to do. 800-848-WABC. Suzanne is in Fresh Meadows. Hello, Suzanne.
Yeah, hi, Frank. I'm crippled, or else I would walk with you. I really, really would.
Well, then, in that case, I'm very sorry to hear that you're crippled.
Yeah, so am I. And I got news for you. I left coast to coast to come to you. Molly is wonderful. She is beyond wonderful. You're very, very blessed that you have her to work with.
I agree. And you're absolutely right. And we appreciate you coming over from coast to coast. And we're not going to send you back there, Suzanne. You got to stick with us.
No, that's not the point. The point is, I mean, the topics are wonderful. You do a myriad of topics. It's terrific. They're wonderful. And all I can tell you, I'm blessed because I found you. I'm a cancer survivor, and I love calling Molly, and she's wonderful to me when I call. And I've been trying to get a hat. I want to buy a hat. I mean, whatever it will take. And I'm getting closer, I think.
Well, I think so, too, Suzanne. And we're ordering more, so hopefully we can get you one for free. But even if we can't, then hopefully you'll be able to order one.
I figured that I was going to try to win the contest. But I figured I'm trying. Frank, God.
Would you have gotten that question right that the guy got wrong?
I didn't hear it. I was on hold for Molly, and I was
understood. Yes, no. Molly's doing her own show there in the control room. So, Suzanne, thanks for your nice words, and good luck. I'm glad you survived cancer.
I also know what you're going to have. I know what baby
is. What is it? Tell me.
No, I'm not going to tell you because you don't want to know.
Okay. Well, all right. So, well, I mean, it's just a prediction on your part, Suzanne. It's not as if you're.
All I can tell you, think pink.
Think pink. Wow. All right. May have to name her Suzanne if that's the case. Thank you, Suzanne. 800-848-WABC. We'll do 15 seconds of fame coming up in about 10 minutes. And we'll take your calls on a wide variety of subjects. And then Juliet and I have the WABC Early News featuring Deb Valentine at 5 a.m. If you want to be heard in as part of the 15 seconds of fame, you can start queuing up at 800-848-9222, and you'll get 15 seconds to say whatever you want about whatever you'd like. Now, I do want to talk to you about GetTheTea.com. It is a wonderful product. It is a wonderful website, I should say, and it has a wide variety of products on there. Now, the reason it's called GetTheTea.com is because that's the place that you can go to get the tea. Now, Get the Tea is a colloquialism that people use these days to talk about catching up with one another. But that's not what you do. You can catch up with your digestive health. You can catch up with your energy levels that might be lackluster. You can order at GetTheTea.com Life Change Tea. This is a tea. It's a cold tea specifically blended with a powerful herbal proprietary formula. Gives you more energy without caffeine. Tastes great. There are no fillers, no GMOs. It is completely organic. It's a mild cleanse and a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. That's why their slogan is the tea that makes you go. If you ever have a problem going because you're constipated or whatever the case may be, you can try some of this tea at GetTheTea.com, and you will have a great deal of you'll be a great deal more regular, I'll say. They have a lot of other great supplements on there as well. Supplements to help your immune system, supplements to help your digestion, supplements to help your cardiovascular system. Whatever you need health-wise, they've got your number at GetTheTea.com. Use the promo code Frank, and if you do that, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. That's GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank. W-A-B-C. Drumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song. You should see Matt, Molly, and Juliet, I don't want to call it dancing, but they are swaying rhythmically with the music, which I might add is one of the songs, Killing Me Softly by the Fugees, on our approved music list. So there you have it. We are approved to play the Fugees. All right. Hey, I want to thank William Horowitz, who reached out to me on Instagram, telling me which concession stand that he's working at Citi Field tonight. And I will come visit you, William, and I hope that you will consider giving me something for free. Thank you. William Horowitz, if memory serves, was not only a former candidate for city council out in Queens, but I believe he was a former intern at this radio station for the Steve Malzberg show back in the day. If I'm mistaken, then I apologize to William and the New York Mets and Steve Malzberg, but I don't think I am. Hey, if you want to find me on Instagram, you can do so at Morano Vision. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Vision. You can also email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. Sophia emailed me before, and she finally was able to get my email address, but she sent me the returned mail thing, like when you write to an incorrect email address, because she was writing to frank.marano instead of M-O. It is an O. It is an O. From what I understand, Marano, M-A-R-A-N-O, tends to be a last name that is of Spanish derivation rather than M-O-R-A-N-O, which is of Italian derivation. So you can email me, frank.marano@wabcradio.com. I want to urge you to subscribe to the podcast. You've got to listen to the podcast, not only because if you just listen now, you miss a lot of great stuff. For instance, you can hear my discussion with Rudy Giuliani earlier. You can hear my discussion with Paula Poundstone earlier. You can hear my discussion about Atlantic City with Michael Traeger from Travelzork earlier. But you'll always get the show downloaded to your phone each and every morning if you search The Other Side of Midnight in iTunes or any podcast app and hit the subscribe button. And you get it on your phone each and every day. So it's a pretty neat thing. We've cracked the top 50 in terms of entertainment programs on iTunes, but there's still a long way to go. And a lot of people are downloading the podcast, but we're actually down maybe 3% from 30 days ago. But we're still doing well, but we want to up those podcast numbers. So if you're not listening to this show in its entirety, please go to fmwabc.com. All our episodes are on there. Or you can just search The Other Side of Midnight on any podcast app, and you'll automatically get this show downloaded to your phone each and every day. And, of course, we're on Twitter at Frank Morano as well. Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O, trying gradually to become a social media influencer. Only need about 40 or 50,000 more followers on Twitter in order to be able to make a living as a social media influencer. So if you want to be part of that fighting 50,000, find me on Twitter at Frank Morano. Got a nice email here from Ellen, who writes of the baseball discussion we were having a minute ago. People don't have long attention spans anymore, and baseball is a longer game. But is there a way to counterbalance this? Maybe align some well-known personalities with teams. Well, the first part of what she said, making baseball shorter, that is actually a big part of what the Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred has been trying to do. he is generally of the opinion that baseball is better when there's less of it. And the Mets played a doubleheader yesterday. The doubleheaders now are supposed to be 7 innings. Now, those two games ended up being 9 innings because they went into extra innings. But as part of, if you have a regular game, part of the reason they now start with a runner on second base in extra innings is to end those games quickly. So at least in terms of game length, that is on the same page as what Rob Manfred is thinking. As far as aligning some well-known personalities, I think that may be why they're looking at bringing a comedian to Citi Field. So we'll see. Keith is in New Jersey. Hello, Keith.
Hey, how you doing? Last call or talk about putting a glove on a kid's in the hand. I say just get rid of the woke and get rid of just remember, baseball is an all-American sport. All-American, get to the parents, get to the fathers. Fathers will get the kids to the games. Second thing is for Juliet. Let's see if Juliet can set Molly up on a blind date with me.
With you?
Yeah, why not?
Well, Molly's got a boyfriend.
I don't know.
Well, hey, you got to listen.
Let's go someone else in the control room.
Well, how about Matt? You want to go on a blind date with Matt? Matt's single. No? Well, then there's nobody else.
Come on.
You got Deb is married. Juliet is married. So your choice is Matt or nobody. He's the only unattached person here.
Someone else. I'm a jet setter also. Let's find someone for our friends.
Well, okay. Well, I'm sure Juliet will keep you at the front. At the top of her list, I think she has at least one single friend. So we'll refer Keith to her, hopefully. Dan is in Rego Park. Hello, Dan.
Let me turn it off.
That would be nice.
Thanks, Frank. Oh, I just turned it on. Okay, going. The disparity in the crack sentencing can be traced back originally to the black community because they put pressure on the government because of what they thought the whole their community was being destroyed.
You're actually right about that, Dan. And Charles Rangel has said the same thing, and that is true. However, it doesn't make it right, as far as I'm concerned. But that is a fair point, Dan. I'm always interested in the people that call radio shows to go on the air, and then they're surprised that they get on. They're taken aback. Oh, Mia, what am I doing? Let me turn off the radio. I don't know. Have you ever noticed that? All right. Well, without further ado, we'll give everybody an opportunity to be surprised. If you want to weigh in for 15 seconds, now's the time. Just dial 800-848-9222 because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Terry is in Bayside. Hello, Terry.
Happy birthday to you. Jet set, and the guy answered Bobby Bonds there. Juliet, Molly, all together now. Go Buchanan, go. Go Buchanan, go. Go Buchanan, go. Go Buchanan, go. That guy would have won.
Irishman in the Bronx.
James O'Keefe of Project Veritas needs our help. Their New York headquarters flooded. Go to projectveritas.com to donate and tell them the Irishman sent you.
He's getting a commission on those donations. Raji is in Manhattan. Hello.
Before the elections, America-hating radicals spread rumors that to stay in power, Trump would go as far as preempting war. However, General Milley clears the matter with China's General Li, thus preventing World War III. Thanks.
800-848-9222. Peter is in Pennsylvania. Hello.
Hey, hi. I don't mean to be cruel, but what is up with letting non-air people, you know, read the sports and the news on your station? I mean, it sounds like a college radio station, and if they are going to do it, please stop butchering the names. Learn the names of the people.
Roger is in Massachusetts. Hello.
Yes. Since Narcan is so readily and widely available to help anyone who really needs it, regardless of their life choices, so shouldn't Regeneron be widely and readily available for someone to use to rescue those who need it, regardless of their...
Ralph is in New Jersey. Hello.
You know, the Huawei lady, the drug lady from Canada, that is a road deal that allowed that woman to get away. It is extortion. It is blackmail. And, you know, to Joseph Biden, we're not competing with China.
E. Frank is in Astoria. Hello. 15 seconds, guys.
Yes, Frank, I think that the new head coach of the New York Jets, Robert Saleh, can teach a lot of civics to President Joe Biden in the White House by shaking his hand and saying, Islam is a friend of yours.
800-848-9222. Steve is in Brooklyn. Hello, Steve.
A voter's guide for the election 22. A Democrat's an autocrat, but if Republican, go vote them in.
Frankie is in Glendale. Hello.
Good morning. Each day, Mayor de Blasio has a news conference, and there's a lot of talk about the closing of Rikers Island. Why don't a reporter ask him, what's going to happen to Rikers Island after they close it?
Mike is in West Palm. Hello.
Top of the morning, Frank. I was listening to yesterday's show. Congratulations. First year celebration, ABC. Second year anniversary. Your wife's in the third trimester. And a shout out to Joe from Ronkonkoma. And also, Matt Sapienza. Proud to be an Italian. Nothing like Sapienza, Italian bread.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
9222. Carol is in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi there, Frank. I was so pleased to discover that Mayor Giuliani was so involved in entertainment. I never realized that before.
Well, thank you, Carol. I wouldn't say the mayor is involved in entertainment. I would say he watches television occasionally, and there are some shows he likes, like the Sopranos. I do recommend that article that I was just telling you about in the New York Times Magazine. I'm interested to see this new Sopranos film. It's gotten kind of mixed reviews, but I'm going to watch it anyway. Juliet, were you a Sopranos fan when it was on? Take it
you
or leave
what?
It?
No. No. The weirdest thing. I can't believe I don't. I wasn't a huge fan. No, I tried watching it, and I just probably 10 years after it came out.
Okay. And,
so I felt like
you were not impressed 10 years later.
No, right. No, I'm a Homeland person. I love The Untouchables. I love Goodfellas. I love Blow. I love all those types of mafia drug. But no, Sopranos didn't do it for me.
All right. Well, hey,
weird.
Different strokes
for
different folks. Yeah. Well, you are weird, but that doesn't have anything to do with your Sopranos fandom. All right. Stay tuned for the WABC early news coming up.
Weirdness.
Well, you should.
I do.
You're very a unique person.
Interesting, I think I said yesterday.
Absolutely.
And you agreed.
I do agree. You are interesting. I'm interested in you. All right. In the strictly platonic and professional
really,
sense.
Personality makes the world
that.
Go round.
There you go.
That's
there
right.
you go, baby.
That's right. All right. We have a lot of interesting stories that we're going to be covering on the WABC Early News. You want to stay in touch with me, you can follow me on Twitter, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, Morano. Hopefully I'll see some of you at Citi Field today. And hopefully, maybe I'll see some of you in Atlantic City on Friday when I go down there for the Harry Hurley event. You know, it's funny that Harry Hurley. You like Harry, right?
Yeah.
He's a fan of yours. And I'm going down there for this charitable event that I go down for every year. And not only is Tom Cantone from Mohegan Sun an honoree, but Tony Orlando, who you can hear every Saturday night at 10 p.m., he's going to be an honoree. And so is Johnny Russo, who's been one of my favorite guests on the show. He's an honoree. And so Harry asked me to record a video, and he says, oh, you know, record a video, we'll play it. And all I was thinking of is, why doesn't Harry just have, since I'm going to the event and he knows I'm going, I bought a ticket, why doesn't he just have me speak there? And then I realized he wants to be able to edit me down to only a minute, and he's afraid, probably rightly so, that I'm just going to not stop talking once I'm up there on the stage. So it goes to show you, Harry is even smarter than I realized he is. But that should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to ask Johnny why he hasn't come back on the show, because I've been trying to get him, and he always says he's too busy. I don't know what his deal is. I don't know. You know, you could spare an hour at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. and chat with me for a little bit. But whatever. We're not going to beg anybody. But if we are going to beg somebody, we'll beg Johnny Russo. All right. Do want to see you Sunday in the Bronx at the National Psoriasis Foundation Walk. Unless you are crippled, as Suzanne is, you can walk with me. But even if you are crippled, you could still make a contribution. The link is at the top of my Facebook page at facebook.com/MoranoFan. Whatever you can give, $10, $20, $100, would certainly appreciate it. It is a very, very worthy cause. It is the most common autoimmune disease in the country. I have psoriasis, and It's very annoying that, you know, I have it on my scalp, so my scalp flakes. Everyone always thinks I have dandruff. Now, there are a lot of people that have it much worse than me, especially my heart goes out to children that have psoriasis. It's a really tough thing for children to deal with, and this National Psoriasis Foundation does a lot of great work in terms of advocating for children. And I'm actually, if you come down to the walk, I'm actually going to be emceeing that the program for the walk. So it should be a lot of fun. All right, stay tuned to the WABC Early News. Deb Valentine, Juliet Huddy, Joe Nolan, Matt Sapienza, and yours truly, to be continued.